order. A quorum is present. The minutes are the first thing on the agenda. However, we found an error on that, so we will put off the minutes until next week. I know all the people here were for purposes of discussing the minutes, so I'm really sorry about that. But we will be debating the minutes next week. So the first item on the agenda is House File 2765. Representative Coulter, while you are having a seat, would you like to move that House File 2765 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion, and I can move the DE2 as well.
Sure. Is this just to put the bill in the shape you would like, or did you want to describe the DE2?
Why don't we move the DE? Short answer is both, but I'll put it in the shape that I would like first.
Okay, sounds good. Any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted. The bill's in the shape you would like. Proceed to your bill, please, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you from the beginning. I think everybody's here to talk about local elections funding. I know that I don't need to tell this committee how important our local elections administrators are. In essence, they are the frontline workers of our democracy. In Minnesota, we have made and reinforced the choice to have our elections run not by one central office in one city, but by dedicated employees of our counties, cities, and even towns. It is important work, as we all know. But the state of Minnesota has not consistently provided funding to do that work. The legislature has, on occasion, provided one-time funding, most notably through the CARES Act, through the Help America Vote Act. But it's been inconsistent and usually dedicated to a specific purpose, whether or not that specific purpose is really related to a need. This bill would change that equation by providing consistent, ongoing funding to our local governments. And it is, I should add, worth remembering that although this is not the proper committee to discuss this, almost all local expenses come by way of property taxes, which have been especially challenging these last few years. To be clear, this bill would not assume the entire cost of running elections at the local level, nor do I think it should. But I do think, given the import that we all place on this work, it is appropriate for the state to consider, for the state to share some of the costs. In broad strokes, this bill creates the aptly named Voting Operations Technology and Election Resources, or voter account, from which funding is distributed by the Secretary of State to counties in the process laid out in the bill, or rather in the DE2. Counties then distribute the funds based upon an agreement with the local units of government, though there is a provision if that agreement is not reached. The bill also lays out the kinds of things that cities and townships can use the funding on. Finally, I would just point out that Subdivision 6 details reporting requirements from cities and towns to counties, from counties to the Secretary of State, and from the Secretary of State to chairs of the relevant committees. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn things over to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. We have four people who have signed up to testify on this bill. Just so everyone in the audience is aware, too, on subsequent bills, we generally ask people to limit their testimony to 2 minutes, with one exception that I'll talk about when we get to that point. We didn't ask them on this bill, but, you know, and there's only four, so if people could keep their testimony to a few minutes, we won't rigidly time, but just wanted to mention that. So first on the testifier list is Barb Weckman-Brecke, Scott County Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner Brecke, please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, and Chair Freiberg and members of the House Election Committee. My name is Barb Weckman-Brecke, and I am a Scott County Commissioner. I am also here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties, AMC, an organization representing the collective interests of all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I want to thank Representative Coulter for his authorship of this bill, and all the committee members for their longstanding and bipartisan support of our election administrators statewide. But we all know the real heroes of our state's fair, transparent, accessible, and safe elections are the election staff and volunteers all around the state. This bill means more to local election administrators than I can explain in a couple of minutes, particularly the emphasis placed on supporting actual election operations It is important to note, as the representative already said, that this bill represents the first ever ongoing state funding support for elections operations. Equally important, eligible funding purposes in this case are not limited to just technology or e-poll books or cybersecurity investments, as was the case with the more recent federal grants. This bill will fund actual operations cost. I'm going to say that a couple times. This means that this bill would allow for funding of election equipment, staffing, cybersecurity, ADA updates, network upgrades, security, and more. Frankly, this is a dream bill for local election administrators, but also for us, your elected county commissioners, partners, who are always in search of assistance to help relieve some of the rising property tax pressure we are seeing statewide and assist with multi-year budgeting for big purchases such as tabulators and central county machines. To put this in perspective from my county, Scott County, we're the ninth largest county in Minnesota with a growing population just over 150,000. Of that, approximately 96,000 are registered voters. On an average election year, we have between 15 and 30% absentee voters. With recent legislative changes, we expect we will see a rise in eligible voters, increasing voter turnout. Scott County currently spends $1.05 million per year on our even year elections. In addition to these operating costs, we've spent more than $650,000 in tabulator equipment in the last 10 years, over $215,000 in electronic rosters and poll books, and we're spending $30,000 in election server and tabulator software upgrades this year. It's easy to see how our example can play across the state in counties large and small. As the costs of roads and bridges and operations and unfunded state mandates increase, the elections line item is a growing cost and concern. I know this concern is being shared around the state, where counties routinely make difficult decisions regarding rising election costs and needs versus limited budget needs and rising property taxes. I think it's safe to say that everyone in this room can agree that election investment should not be limited to tax-based health or tax-based capacity. Minnesota has a lot to be proud of when it comes to our elections. Minnesota has long been a top state in this country with consistent high voter turnout, and county commissioners stand proud of our election administrators, judges, and volunteers for their work and professionalism and the true integrity of our elections. Running transparent, fair, and accessible elections is one of the most sacred and foundational roles of government. It is incumbent to make sure we do not cut corners on this most critical function. To that point, Representative Coulter's proposal makes a strong statement that the state stands in support of its local governments and election administrators, and that access to election infrastructure should not solely be a responsibility of local property taxpayers. Thank you to the author for his leadership, and thank you to the committee for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Michael Stahlberger from the Minnesota Association of County Officers. Welcome to the committee, Michael Stahlberger. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Stahlberger. I am Director of Property and Environmental Resources for Blue Earth County. In that capacity, we are responsible for about 38,000 registered voters in the county, among other related customer service functions. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Officers. MACO represents all 87 counties' auditors, treasurers, recorders, county finance officers, and also elections administrators. I'm here today to express our association's very strong support and appreciation for Representative Coulter's work on this important bill. MACO's legislative platform and priorities for the 2023 session are built on a series of guiding principles. One of those principles is fair and impartial stewardship of elections statewide. Stewardship, the taking care of something, especially as we relate to elections process for the state of Minnesota's voters, is a responsibility that our association takes very seriously. We work hard day in and day out to enhance the efficiency, the administration, and security of elections statewide. However, this work costs money. The Association of Minnesota Counties, MACO, the League of Minnesota Cities, have all worked together the last several months on this proposal to create a dependable, ongoing funding stream to share elections-related costs. As has already been mentioned, these funds will be used to help upgrade physical and cybersecurity, to help train and hire election staff and election judges, to share in the cost of printing ballots, mailing ballots, and other supplies, as well as to assist in planning for and purchasing and maintaining critical technology that we use to administer the elections. Since this proposal is stable and dedicated funding, it allows our elections administrators and our county administrators to plan for and budget appropriately for long-term investments in elections technology and to provide even more security and integrity to our elections. It's very important to note that counties do not expect this investment to be a complete cover of our cost. We see it as a partnership in the funding, and we know that this proposal will not cover all of our costs related to elections administration. For point of reference for you, in Blue Earth County, we budget for 2 years, and for the last two-year cycle, we budgeted about $985,000 for elections activities and services. That is for about 38,000 registered voters. We're home to 56 precincts. About half of those precincts vote by mail. The other half vote in 27 polling places at 23 distinct locations across the county. Our county courthouse serves as the only location for absentee and mail ballot voting. We support 33 precinct level tabulators and one central count machine, as well as 34 assisted voting devices and 128 electronic rosters to help with registrations and voter check-ins. When I look at our costs for the 2022 general and primary elections alone, we spent about $66,000 on postage alone to mail out ballots, applications, and other elections-related information, including redistricting for 2022. We had $116,000 in maintenance agreements and supportive systems. We spent $57,000 alone to pay election judges in one of our largest cities, the city of Mankato. We also have costs for ballot board, and all of our small cities would also have election judge costs. We spent $38,000 for the ballot stock alone to make sure that we had the correct and secure paper for voters to cast their ballots. And we spent $30,000 for mail-out packets to our voters that choose to vote by mail alone. I could go on and on with additional expenses. I haven't even touched on the expenses for our technology and other capital improvements. But when we add up this amount, we're over $418,000, excluding regular salary time and other unallocated expenses that I have not described for you yet. So you can see that this proposal is an important step towards a continued partnership in supporting the cost of elections for counties, cities, and townships statewide. We are going to use a model under this proposal to allocate those funds to the county and have those then be distributed under agreement with counties, cities, and townships. This is the same model we used for the 2020 CARES Act funding that was provided for elections, and that was very successfully and efficiently administered with the Secretary of State's office.
If you could wrap up your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you. I can end there with our strong support for this bill. I'd be happy to answer any other questions that might be available, but we appreciate your time and we appreciate your attention to this. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you could stick around in case somebody does have a question for you, that would be helpful. Next on the list is Terry Spangrud from the City of New Brighton. Welcome to the committee, Terry Spangrud. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Spangrud. I'm the city clerk for the City of New Brighton. I am also a member of the League of Minnesota Cities Elections Task Force. And I'm here to show
If you could just please speak into the microphone.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Terry Spangrud from the City of New Brighton. I'm also on the League of Minnesota Cities Elections Task Force. And I am here to share why this elections funding is so critical for Minnesota cities. Cities and counties across the state work together to administer elections. It's an important collaboration that leads to the same result statewide. Whenever a voter goes to the polls, they're met with a very well-prepared and ready precinct that allows them to vote. What voters might not always see, though, is the months and months of work and preparation that leads up to election day to make that happen. Elections take time and elections take resources, both of which local governments are more than happy to dedicate to this very, very important process. But as election responsibilities grow over the years and as the cost of equipment increases, it can be very difficult for cities to keep up with the expenses of administering elections. I'd like to thank Representative Coulter for carrying this bill to assist with these costs. When I talk with my colleagues across the state about where their election budgets feel the most strained, I hear several common themes. Most importantly, or commonly, I hear from my colleagues that they want to be able to hire and retain more election judges. In the year 2024, cities and counties will be administering three elections, not two. And cities who are conducting odd year elections will be conducting four elections between this fall and next November. Running these elections doesn't take just resources, it also takes people. And as an election administrator, I know that my biggest asset is the staff that I'm able to bring on each election to make sure that our elections are smooth and secure. to keep up with election judge wages of surrounding jurisdictions and retain those election judges, we're raising our election judge wages in New Brighton for the next election cycle to make sure that we can adequately recruit and train staff. A financial analysis of our upcoming 2024 election costs shows a significant increase in our election costs. New Brighton's election costs have almost doubled since 2018 because of these rising costs. The funds through this bill will help ensure that cities like mine can continue to train and hire a sufficient number of election judges and staff to help fulfill our statutory mandates and also provide a positive and efficient experience for voters. Cities would also use these funds to support security-related infrastructure updates or other equipment updates. Election equipment can be extraordinarily expensive, and to prevent increase to taxpayers, cities make do with what they have for a lot longer than what the infrastructure can sometimes be supported with technology replacements. These funds will allow cities to make some of these upgrades sooner and help cities save for upcoming anticipated elections infrastructure costs in a dedicated election fund. The funding structure allows cities and counties to work together to identify needs for the funds, similar to how the CARES election funding worked, and we believe that this formula is fair and will ensure that both cities and counties are able to receive funding. I'm very proud of the work that my city does every election. I'm extraordinarily proud of our election judges. These ongoing funds will show that the state is committed to partnering with our local communities to do what we do best, serving our communities by administering elections. Thank you, Representative Coulter, for this bill, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for considering this proposal.
Thank you for your testimony. And our final testifier is Secretary of State Steve Simon. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I know time is short, so I'll try to be short. I know a lot of people are in this room for another very significant bill, but I have to tell you, this bill is a really, really big deal. So I want to thank Representative Coulter for his leadership. I want to thank AMC, LMC, MAKO, and others who have worked on it. This is groundbreaking and historic. Local governments across the country struggle with how to finance the escalating costs of election administration, and the business of elections has gotten more complex and therefore more expensive. This bill, I think, acknowledges that reality by providing a steady and reliable stream of funding to the folks who administer elections at the ground level. I often say that the folks at the counties and cities and townships, they are our partners. They are our teammates in putting on good, strong, honest, clean elections. So I'm happy to support this measure. I'm happy to have their backs, just as they have had our backs so often. I just want to be clear, as others have said, but just to put an exclamation point on it, this would not supplant the funds that counties and other local governments already spend, but it would supplement them in an important way. And it's an acknowledgement that our local communities do bear the lion's share of these costs. And again, it's property taxpayers who ultimately bear that expense. The funds will be appropriated to our office to disperse annually to every county across the state. This is a model that is tested and trusted and effective. As Mr. Stahlberger said, it most recently was put into place with the 2020 CARES Act legislation, and it worked very smoothly and very well. So I just ask members for their support for what really is a historic change and reform to the way that we fund and therefore perform elections. Thanks for your support.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. That concludes the list of people who have signed up to testify on this bill. Before we turn to member discussion, I am going to offer the A2 amendment to this bill. So on the House floor yesterday, there was a motion made to by Representative Torkelson, Lead Torkelson, to suspend the rules and take up a bill. He had authored addressing this issue of fundraisers for political parties occurring during the legislative session. I mentioned then when I spoke against that motion that we were working on language as well. So given that the motion was made, I thought it was appropriate to offer this today for discussion. You know, as I said on the floor, I think it's more appropriate for the language to focus on us as legislators rather than on political parties. I feel like the bill, the motion was made on yesterday was drawn pretty broadly and would hamper the abilities of political parties to work in other areas outside of the legislative session, like statewide candidates, federal candidates, and so forth. So this was the, but I do think this is a serious issue, and this is the language we'd put together. I hadn't really been planning on offering it today until the motion was made on the floor yesterday. You can see from the timestamp that we had this language ready, but It was kind of a late addition to the agenda, but within the amendment deadline. So is there any discussion to this amendment? I have a feeling, Lee Torkelson, you might have something to say about it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important issue. I would hope that perhaps we would not try to dive into the details of it today, that we may work bipartisanly to figure out the best approach to addressing this significant issue that has a direct impact on the integrity of our institution. I'm reaching out offer our hand to you to work with you and come up with language that really does accomplish what needs to be accomplished here. We have an image in the public that I think is tarnished by an effort that was ongoing this year. Of course, the fundraiser has been canceled, but it just doesn't fit with the way that we need to operate. And I certainly do want to work with you to come to formulate a bipartisan approach to this issue that can be broadly supported here in the Minnesota House and hopefully also broadly supported across the street in that other body.
All right. Thank you, Lead Torkelson. I do appreciate those comments. With that in mind, I am willing to withdraw this amendment. I did want it to be on the record, though, that we are working on this. It's possible, and I look forward to working with you on this. I do feel it's important to address this issue, so I can't promise that this language or language similar to it won't appear subsequently in an omnibus bill, but I'm certainly willing to meet with you to work on this in the near future. And we also have plenty of other things on the agenda, and I don't know that we need to get into a protracted debate about this. So with that, I will withdraw this amendment and turn to member discussion on House File 2765. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter. So why are election cost increases happening right now?
Representative Coulter.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Davis. I think probably the testifiers could speak to that more sort of specifically. I think the sort of broader answer is that election costs are increasing for much the same reasons that costs for everything are increasing. Technology is becoming more expensive. Folks are I know, as well at the local level, Data Practices Act requests are increasing, and that has a cost to produce relevant data and documents, and so on. So I am not aware of any sort of uniquely specific reason that elections administration costs are increasing, but if one of the testifiers can maybe speak.
Yes, I see Michael Stahlberger looking ready to answer. So
thank you.
Welcome back to the committee. Please respond to the question briefly.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. In Blue Earth County and in other counties across the state, where we're seeing our expenses would be in labor, wages, obviously. Election judges, as mentioned, the salary for election judges. While many people volunteer for that position, many do need to be paid or compensated for that, and so our costs have risen in that regard. The technology that we use in the polling places and in the absentee voting process has increased, the software arrange licenses and whatnot on that sort of thing. And it's even as simple as, like I mentioned, the ballot stock. The price of paper has gone up as supply and demand has changed. And so we've seen escalating costs in almost all of our areas related to elections.
Okay. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is going to help ease the burden of property, because right now about half the property taxes is going to pay for elections, is my understanding. So will this help ease the burden of paying for property taxes in the county?
Representative Coulter, would you like to answer, or should I turn it to Michael Stahlberger?
Well, perhaps a little bit of clarification. When you say half of the property taxes, what are you referring to?
Representative Davis.
Within the county. The county collects property taxes, and they have to pay for their own burdens in county. And my understanding is a lot of that money goes towards elections already. And so my question is, this, my understanding is this will help ease that burden on the counties with property taxes?
Michael Stahlberger?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. I can't speak to the 50% threshold. Counties would all have different levies that they're setting.
Sure.
But this amount would, as counties work through their budgeting process, because it's stable and ongoing funding, they would be able to look at that as a contribution towards the expenses for elections, which would allow them to adjust where they're allocating the property tax levy that's being collected.
Okay. So thank
Representative
you.
Representative Davis, final follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So yes, thank you that this will help ease the burden of property taxes. Representative Coulter, could we get that in writing?
I'll take that as a rhetorical suggestion, yeah. Representative Davis. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So my question, and perhaps, I don't know if this is for the Secretary of State, I wanted to ask about when we started to see the increase. So is he still here?
Secretary Simon or Nicole Freeman? I don't know. Michael Stahlberger, is this something you're able to answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you can maybe rephrase the question, I can try to help with it. I wasn't quite following.
Yeah, Representative Altendorf.
I think this is at a state level, so I just wanted to ask when did we start seeing the significant increases in the elections, and is this correlated to when we've changed the election process?
We haven't changed the election process.
Yeah. So I see Nicole Freeman from the Secretary of State's office is approaching. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then respond to the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think that the best way to answer the question
Could you just identify yourself for the record?
Oh, apologies. Nicole Freeman, Office of the Secretary of State. I think that that costs have been increasing for a variety of reasons, as Michael Stahlberger laid out. I think that there's, we're using we use tabulators and have, I think, used electronic tabulators since the 80s or 90s. And that equipment has to be replaced periodically. And so that in combination with all the other rising costs that Mr. Stahlberger outlined, I think would be would all play into election costs rising.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you again, Representative Coulter. I think this what is happening on this bill, just to be very specific, is I have talked to county commissioners and, in my district, and it's kind of the same as what's happening in the schools, is that the government, we are creating the problem. We have created a lot of mandates, unfunded mandates, and now what your bill is doing, and your intention is right, but your bill is trying to fund what we have created is all these unfunded mandates in the state. And the election process has gotten, much more, I would say, complicated. We've gone from 20, 30 years ago having a lot more faith in the election process to now, with all of the electronics and everything that we're doing and everything that we're pouring in. I mean, right now in Minnesota, we have 46 days of voting, right? This has to be adding to all of our election costs. And now we're funding all of this mess that we've created. So, my suggestion would be for us to look at easier ways to simplify, and to go to like a paper ballot and to have one day voting. And I think our costs would be drastically reduced.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Coulter, for bringing this bill. And I think one of the things I'm interested in is, we have local elections administrative, and what I heard and I think what was interesting was that as a state, we really haven't had a financial commitment that is ongoing and sustainable. And when we think about the other things our local government and counties do, the infrastructure, both human and physical, we provide funding for that, whether it's roads and bridges or other things that folks are using. And so as we think about it, I'm just sort of wondering how you're thinking about the impact that a sustainable funding source will make on the infrastructure of our elections. Sort of what will that allow? How will that add to the values that we are trying to accomplish here at the state level in terms of safe, secure, and accessible elections?
Representative Coulter.
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. I think you make an excellent point. And I, you know, I sort of alluded to this in my opening comments, but we, in a variety of ways, even beyond elections, we have made a number of decisions that we, rather than sort of running things centrally through the state, that we defer to our local officials, local elected officials, city council, city councils, township boards, county commissions, and so on. With the stated interest of local control, of these local officials being able to run things and administer things the way that they would like to be able to do. And that, you know, that adds, by virtue of that, adds a certain amount of cost. It adds a certain amount of bureaucratic infrastructure. And so I think this is a way of balancing that desire for local control, that belief that we have had in local administration of our elections, while also stating that this is something that is of statewide value. So I think you make an excellent point there. Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be quick. I think if we value safe, secure, accessible elections, we should invest in them. And I think that what this bill does is it invests in the real trusted and long-term local infrastructure that we've had for our elections since we've been a state. And so I just really appreciate this bill, and I appreciate the county elections administrators and the local elections administration who are doing the work and who brought us this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Lead Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of items I want to cover. We heard a bill last Wednesday from Representative Hicks, House File 2746, that would set up a grant program for disability access to elections. I think my question is for the author. Is there any reason that these funds that are allocated in your bill today could they be used for the same purposes as that grant program that would be established with Representative Hicks' bill?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Torkelson, for the question. I, you know, obviously I don't have Representative Hicks' bill right in front of me, so I can't necessarily speak to the specifics of it. You know, my initial thought would be that there could potentially be some overlap, but I, you know, I think, again, the purpose of Representative Hicks' bill and the purpose of this bill are, there may be some overlap there, but they're largely different, and I would suspect, you know, this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion as well, and so I would suspect if both proposals move forward, we could potentially work on the language to either combine the proposals or ensure that there's a little bit more separation there as well.
Okay. Lead Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I think we'll need to hear from the Secretary of State's office to clarify this issue.
Okay. Nicole Freeman. I guess I would just point out the language on line 2.24 of the amendment does say capital improvements for improving physical access to a voting location. So there is language in there that it could be used for that. And I think Representative Coulter is exactly right that both bills were laid over and we can harmonize those two provisions together too as part of a potential omnibus bill. Did you still want to hear from the Secretary of State's office on this with that?
I was just looking for a good solid answer to my question, Mr. Chair. I think you've given it to me, and Ms. Greenman is nodding her head in approval, so we'll...
You may stand down, Nicole.
So my point being that, you know, why set up a complicated grant program when we have the ability to fund the very same thing through this bill? Just to note as you assemble your omnibus bill that maybe we shouldn't be doubling up. The second point I'd like to make really follows up on Representative Altenburg. We heard in the Secretary of State's remarks today that when elections become more complex, they become more expensive. I may not have quoted him exactly word for word, but I know he used both more complex and more expensive in the same sentence. You know, we have fiscal notes here that tell us how much it's going to cost the state of Minnesota. But when we pass all these election provisions, we should also really have a fiscal note that indicates how much it's going to cost local government. Because our work here directly impacts the work in counties. And when we make elections more complicated, longer time frames, whatever it is, many of them add to the expense. I would be happy to call down more testifiers, but I know you want to move along. This bill is being laid over, but this is a really important point. Our work isn't just what it costs the state. And the other thing that I think is really important to note is often when the state offers funding for a program, whatever the program is, there's a temptation to add strings to that. We put mandates, we attach mandates to the funding. We require all sorts of things. And once the funding is in place, it's a great temptation for legislators to say, well, we're giving you this money, you better do this too. And that can make it even more complicated and more difficult for our local election administrators to do the work they need to do, which is administrate clean and fair elections. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. No, briefly, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Mr. Chair, I was trying to get your attention for quite some time, and I think we got missed me. But I just wanted to make a couple really quick points. First, I certainly actually agree with Representative Torkelson that it's a good idea to make sure we understand the implications for our local counties and municipalities. That would be certainly helpful. But that said, I just wanted to be really crystal clear on a couple points that were brought up here. First, we talked about paper ballots. The state of Minnesota has always used paper ballots. We continue to use paper ballots. That has not changed. That continues to be the case. Each of those ballots are retained for a specified amount of time per the law. The only difference is, of course, that we have the ability to tabulate those ballots more quickly using a tabulator. Our equipment is getting old. Like everything else in the world, equipment wears out. It has to be replaced. Is it maybe a little fancier? Perhaps. But the reality is, if we want to talk about integrity and being able to feel confident in our elections, we don't want to wait for a hand count ballot, which, by the way, we're human beings. And do you want to know who doesn't do things accurately? Human beings. Tabulators, if my understanding is correct, actually have an almost perfect track record, if not perfect, of being able to tabulate those ballots, and with far more certainty than human eyes and abilities. And so, and they're also able to do it much more efficiently and much quicker, which means that we can get election results quicker, which means that people can feel confident that all the votes get tabulated in a timely fashion and those results are not delayed or altered in any way, that they are available when they need to be. So I think that's really important in terms of talking about our focus on wanting to be efficient and fair and have integrity in our systems. And I think that the critical part of that is that, you know, yes, it's these pieces to ensure things like cybersecurity as well. We've had a lot of conversations about that. Those are critical components too. And what we hear time and time again from voters is we want that security. We want that level of certainty. And in order to ensure that, we have to pay for it. So my argument for today is just to say it's worth it, right? And I think the voters agree on that. So making sure that we keep our cities and counties whole and give them some assistance in ensuring that integrity and that security just makes good sense. So thank you for the bill, Representative Coulter. And with that, I hope we can vote yes.
Thank you. Any closing remarks, Representative Coulter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quickly, Representative Coulter, to your second point, I absolutely agree that very often when the legislature allocates funding, sometimes it gets expanded beyond what it was originally intended to, which is why this particular bill was written the way it was, to be clean and sort of focus in on the issue. I would also add, though, as somebody who worked in this place as a staffer for 10 years, that is a bipartisan problem that we face and not unique to any one particular caucus. So we've heard a lot of talk in this committee today and even beyond these walls about election integrity and administration. And I want to say again that for whatever we may not agree on, I think we all agree that it is of extreme importance. And the concept behind this bill is that the cost of doing that important work should not solely be the responsibility of our local governments. So thank you all for the thoughtful discussion and just want to strongly encourage inclusion of this bill in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. With that, Representative Coulter renews the motion that House File 2765 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, Representative Frazier. So as you approach, well, so I will move that House File 2486 be recommended to be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Just so everyone in the public and members have an outline here, I will have Representative Frazier introduce the bill. Then I will move the DE amendment and explain that a bit. And so we will vote on that. And then we will turn to public testimony on this bill. Just given the extreme amount of interest in it, we have limited testimony of both supporters and opponents to 20 minutes apiece. Because the supporters were organized, we let them divide up the 20 minutes as they saw fit. So there will be some testifiers there speaking a little bit longer. For the opponents, there were quite a few who signed up. They will be allowed each 2 minutes to speak, but it should cumulatively equal about 20 minutes. So welcome to the committee, Representative Frazier. Sorry for that long introduction. Just want to give people a roadmap here. Please describe your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Vice Chair and committee members. Good to be back, and it's always robust conversations in here. And I do want to say I appreciate all the folks that are here to support this bill and also those that are here to share their thoughts about the bill as well. I mean, I think it shows us how important we appreciate the democracy that we have in our elections that we have here in the state of Minnesota. So today I'm here to present House File 2486. House File 2486 will establish a task force to engage election officials, state and local lawmakers, and community members for the purpose of assessing the adoption and implementation of statewide ranked choice voting and recommending implementation standards for the local adoption. The task force will convene to address and resolve the critical questions that must be answered to ensure that ranked choice voting will be a seamless transition so that Minnesota will maintain its high level of voter participation when ranked choice voting is implemented. But most importantly, we want to ensure that we get this right because the benefits that ranked choice voting offers. No matter the outcome of the election, ranked choice voting changes the relationship between candidates and voters, forcing candidates to reach out beyond their base, which is beneficial for our democracy and will facilitate broader voter engagement, which in turn can lead to less polarizing campaign tactics and greater diversity in candidates. In short, ranked choice voting can lead us to the diverse representative democracy that is truly reflective of our local, county, and state demographics. Ranked choice voting gives voters the ability to rank their candidates, thereby allowing their vote to count even if their first choice does not go on to win. This empowering of voters can help to remove the spoiler effect that discourages some candidates from running and also address the frustration and disinterest that some voters experience when they believe they are wasting a vote based on our current winner-take-all system that is in place. Ranked choice voting also ensures that the winning candidate will receive a majority of the votes, thereby reflecting broader representation of the voters. There is always the question of, can ranked choice voting really deliver on these claims? Well, we are lucky here in our state because we have local examples here in a few of our larger local jurisdictions. In Minneapolis, ranked choice voting has been used since 2009. Since then, the council is the most ethnically diverse and gender balanced in the city's history. The first Somali American, Latina, and Hmong candidates were elected to the city council in 2013. In 2017, the number of candidates who were women, people of color, or from different political parties was at a historic high. In 2017, competitive candidates of color ran in the mayoral race and 18 of 13 council seats, and competitive women candidates ran for mayor in 11 of the 13 council seats. In 2021, the trend continued with a broad, diverse group of candidates running and being elected in that jurisdiction. In St. Paul, our capital city, where ranked choice voting was introduced in 2011, the council was the most ethnic diverse and gender balanced in the city's history as well. In 2013, ranked choice voting elected the city's first Hmong city council member with second choice votes. The second place finisher, also a candidate of color, then went on to be the council member's chief aide. In 2015, Rebecca Noker was elected with the second choice votes to become her ward's first female council member. In 2017, Melvin Carter became the city's first African-American mayor in a highly competitive race. And in 2019, Nelsie Yang, a Hmong American woman, was elected in Ward 6, and Dai Tao was reelected in Ward 1. Both were competitive ranked choice voting races.
In closing, ranked choice voting gives voters options and allows diverse candidates an opportunity to build a truly broad coalition by focusing on the issues that impact the voters. Our democracy is an experiment, and it is always important, as with it being an experiment, that we continue to evolve and we continue to provide tools to create the most inclusive democracy possible. That is what ranked choice voting is. It is a tool to further that end. With that, Chair, I'll stand.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Even though I gave a lengthy exposition about how this will work, I just realized I forgot to mention two things. First, Secretary Simon will speak between the supporters and opponents. I wasn't sure which category he fit in, so he gets his own category. And second, people did request to sign up or to speak, but we weren't able to accommodate it because of the time constraints. We directed them to submit written comments. So you will see in your packet you have a green folder just with comments on this bill. Most of those are also posted on our website, so I would encourage everyone to review those. There's a lot of important and insightful commentary in there. So with that, I will move the DE3 amendment. And just to describe the DE3 amendment, this amendment offers revisions to House File 2486 that reflect the input from the Office of the Secretary of State, county administrators, and other members. I wasn't the main person who developed it, so if there are questions about it, I may defer to other parties, such as the Secretary of State's office or Representative Greenman. The amendment does three primary things. First, it authorizes local jurisdictions to adopt ranked choice voting in local elections if they choose and creates uniform standards for local jurisdictions who adopt ranked choice voting. Second, it creates a task force to assess the adoption and implementation of ranked choice voting in federal and state elections, and to make recommendations on the implementation issues with the local option. The task force would have 25 members made up of elections administrators, elected leaders, community advocates, and government leaders. 13 of the 25 members represent election administrators charged with administering local elections. We received quite a bit of feedback that this was a critical group to highlight in the composition of the task force, given the complexity of some of the issues that they'd be looking at. We also received quite a bit of email support for structuring the task force this way. The amendment also further clarifies the scope of the task force's work around statewide and local adoption of ranked choice voting. Its purpose is to assess the feasibility and system readiness of statewide ranked choice voting, to make recommendations to the legislature on technology, education, and draft legislation that would be necessary to implement statewide ranked choice voting. The amendment also charges the task force with making recommendations around standards, rules, and procedures around implementing ranked choice voting in local elections in conjunction with state general elections. Finally, the amendment makes changes to address guidance from the Secretary of State's office. The amendment removes the presumption that Minnesota will adopt statewide ranked choice voting before the task force examines how this could be done, and also the impact on Minnesota's election system and the architectural changes required in Minnesota's system. The amendment also moves the implementation date of the local option provision to give time for the task force to examine the issues that will still need to be addressed as it relates to implementing ranked choice voting in conjunction with the state general election. The amendment provides guidance on where the ranked choice voting tabulation center would be if there are multiple overlapping ranked choice voting jurisdictions. And it makes changes to ensure that all of the state requirements for the way to request write-in votes be counted, ballots be handled and delivered by election judges, and certification procedures and timelines are followed in conjunction with ranked choice voting elections. I think maybe to get the bill kind of in the shape the committee wants it, we should adopt that amendment at this point. And I don't see any discussion. So all in favor of adopting the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. So we will turn now to public testimony. So our first public testifier is Congresswoman Mary Peltola. It's an honor to have a congressperson from another state here. I don't know the last time this has happened, so really appreciate you coming to Minnesota, Congresswoman. thank you for being here, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is my microphone on?
Is that so?
No?
It's a little quiet.
Okay. How about now?
That sounds much better.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always a pleasure to come to Minnesota. Good morning. Okay. Okay. I said it's always a pleasure to come to Minnesota, and good morning.
We will be updating this building with hopefully better microphones in the near future, but okay. Thank you for bearing with us.
I'll use my outdoor voice. thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. I'm not here to tell you what choice this body should make. That is up to the Minnesotan voters and their elected representatives. But I am glad to share with all of you my personal experience with ranked choice voting. I'll smile, I guess, for the picture. In 2020, Alaskans voted to establish a nonpartisan primary and ranked choice voting system in our elections. 2022 was the first year that we used this new system. In every state and federal election, from the governor's race to one of our U.S. senators, almost all of the legislative seats and my own congressional race, voters could rank the top four candidates that advanced after an open, nonpartisan primary. Despite initial worries, voter turnout was at similar levels to what it was during the 2018 midterm elections. Reports of issues with the voting system were negligible, and the vast majority of voters ranked multiple candidates. This was in part due to significant voter education efforts from our state government, reinforced by outreach from parties and candidates. Our state division of elections found fun and educational ways to share crucial information, like holding a mock vote for Alaska's favorite seafood. In the third round, King Crab won out, even though I was a strong King Salmon supporter. Voters in my election had the opportunity to rank four different candidates that all had unique viewpoints. In the end, up and down the ballot, voters tended to elect candidates that had broad appeal and minimized negative campaigning. Alaskan voters elected a conservative Republican governor, a moderate Republican senator, and a consensus-building Democratic congresswoman, and tripartisan coalitions in both houses of our state legislature. These results demonstrate that Alaskan voters were able to make conscientious, informed decisions using the ranked choice system to elect an ideologically diverse set of candidates for the various offices up for election. Ranked choice voting rewards candidates that can build broad coalitions of voters and bring people together. In my state, our ranked choice system allowed me to run a positive campaign and focus on issues that voters care about. In order to win, I could not afford to alienate or ignore supporters of my opponents, as their second and third choice votes were critical in deciding who won. With ranked choice voting, you have to be willing to listen to every voter. You have to at least consider opposing points of view. RCV brings more voices to the table and motivates candidates to be the best choice for voters rather than just the least harmful. In my race, we talked to voters from all parties, from hardcore Democrats to swing voters to even strong Republicans. We campaigned in every part of the state, from the most urban portions of Anchorage to heavily conservative towns in the Matanuska-Susitna Valley to the most rural villages in western Alaska. I could not take any vote for granted nor write any voter off. Ranked choice voting incentivizes this type of inclusive, big tent politics and encourages candidates to build broad coalitions in order to be successful. It's also worth noting that ranked choice voting does not punish conservative candidates, as some critics have suggested. Alaska's conservative governor won re-election in the first round with an absolute majority of the vote, and a conservative-led coalition was elected to the majority of our state house for the first time since 2016. The type of governance that we have can directly be traced to the incentives of our electoral systems. Gridlock and polarization have become a mainstay of Washington, D.C., in part because of the past system having driven candidates towards negativity, casting their opponents as evil, and reducing voters' choices to the lesser of two evils. In Alaska, we have a bipartisan coalition in both houses of the state legislature. Our bipartisan congressional delegation routinely collaborates for the good of our state. We release joint statements almost as often as we do individual ones. Our politicians understand that if they want to be reelected, they have to be willing to work with the other side and at least show the voters that they are willing to listen to alternative perspectives. Of course, this does not mean that we don't have fundamental disagreements with one another. We do, as we should in a democracy. Rather, the ranked choice voting system makes us more willing to engage with one another where there is room for agreement instead of retreating deeper into our own ideological corners. Once again, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today, and I hope my statement has been helpful in showing how the ranked choice system works in practice.
Thank you for your testimony, Congresswoman Peltola, and thank you for your patience in the first bill as well. The next testifier is Kim Nelson. And after Kim Nelson will be Lynn Eaton. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Kim Nelson, and I'm a longtime business leader here in Minnesota, and I'm here to express business support for ranked choice voting. Minnesota businesses are proud to contribute to the growth and well-being of the great state of Minnesota. And to successfully sustain our growth, we need stability and predictability in our operating environment, and we depend on good governance in our state. We rely on elected officials to negotiate bipartisan solutions that address the many major issues our community faces, like ensuring public safety, ensuring our youth are prepared to join the workforce, and building the modern infrastructure needed to support our state's growing economy. These solutions are essential to our ability to conduct business and to attract and retain employees, and they're critical to the long-term prosperity of Minnesota. Political extremism is incompatible with the needs of Minnesota business. Many business leaders support ranked choice voting because by requiring candidates to achieve 50% of the vote, it disincentivizes extremism and personal attacks and incentivizes policy-driven campaigns designed to appeal to the broad center of the electorate. Candidates who focus on personal attacks will be unlikely to secure the second or third vote of their opponent's supporters. This simple, effective reform is a bipartisan opportunity, and that's why our ranked choice voting has been championed by Republicans in red states like Utah and Alaska, and by Democrats in blue states like Maine and Massachusetts. RCV elections are more competitive, voter turnout is higher, and campaigns are more civil. Studies show that voters find RCV easy to use, they like that it eliminates the spoiler effect and allows them to vote their preferences. RCV also eliminates costly runoff elections like we've seen in places like Georgia and, yes, here in Minnesota. Our political system works best when elected officials work together to hammer out the kind of bipartisan legislation that can stand the test of time. This provides the climate of stability we need to invest, expand, and build our businesses and Minnesota's economy. In the spirit of supporting the adoption of effective bipartisan legislation, I join a number of local business leaders who've signed the letter before you, urging you to adopt ranked choice voting statewide. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Lynn Eaton, and after Lynn Eaton will be Jonathan Wharton. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, representatives. My name is Lynn Eaton. I am from Bemidji, Minnesota, where my wife and I have lived for almost 40 years. Our children were born and educated in Bemidji and now have families of their own. I've been a public servant my entire career. For 30 years, I worked for the Department of Transportation, and following my retirement in 2014, I continued to work as an engineering consultant. In my profession and my capacity as an engineer, I have seen how much citizens depend on well-run services and how partisanship at the state capitol causes shutdowns, cynicism, unacceptable delays, and interruption of planning cycles. These interruptions and delays are costly. The time taken to develop important public works goes to waste when our legislative representatives choose partisanship and legislative gridlock over collaborative discussion that enhances the common good. The citizens of this state and my community deserve the service and respect that broadly supported elected officials can provide. We need to choose between candidates who are willing to do the work of the people they represent instead of adhering to political affiliations and ideological thinking. I currently hold a non-political office as Ward 5 Counselor for the City of Bemidji, but my presence here today and the thoughts I convey are my own. I am speaking for myself and my belief that our children deserve better service from our elected officials. I believe voters, especially younger voters, are so disillusioned by today's political rhetoric, partisanship, and legislative stalemate that they decide not to step into the voting booth to choose between two political ideologies. For them, that is not a meaningful choice. Last night, the Bemidji Charter Commission voted to forward a resolution of support for ranked choice voting to put forward to the Bemidji City Council. There is genuine interest and excitement about the positive benefits of this method of electing representatives. My life service includes volunteering for professional and public organizations, leading civic organizations, as well as leadership roles within my faith community. I've discussed the idea of ranked choice voting with my fellow council members, others in my constituency, my family, my family's friends and acquaintances from across the nation. All of these conversations have noted the very positive potential outcomes from the opportunity of ranked choice voting. Lastly, we must take steps today to give our children hope for a brighter, more positive future. Our Anishinaabe neighbors make decisions while thinking of the next seven generations. I challenge our state's highest legislative authority to do the same. I ask you to vote in favor of ranked choice voting. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony, council member, and thank you for coming all the way down, although there is, in fact, somebody who traveled farther than you to come here. Next up is Jonathan Wharton, and after Jonathan Wharton will be Storm Novak. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Jonathan Wharton. I am a Minneapolis resident and a volunteer with Faribault, Minnesota, and it is more than me. I'm sure you can see a lot of orange shirts like mine in the audience, and it is more than us. Everyone in this room, be they members of the audience, clerks, media, and you distinguished members, can agree that our current election system is in need of change for the better, and the time is now. When I attended the Senate Elections Committee hearing for this bill last week, I remember testimony from Nelsie Yang, the first Hmong American woman to be elected to St. Paul's City Council. Councilperson Yang talked about the benefits she's seen from the ranked choice process in St. Paul, and her testimony really moved me. We are seeing in real time how ranked choice voting provides greater opportunity to women and people of color by opening the process to more candidates and new voices, incentivizing positive campaigns based on the issues and not on personal attacks. Many of us live in communities with issues that we want to fix at the local level. I do. I live in East Phillips, one of the most racially diverse neighborhoods in the state, but also the neighborhood that experiences some of the worst racial health disparities because of toxic environmental pollution. Many of us in systematically problematic communities like mine are looking for candidates that understand our struggles. We recognize with ranked choice voting, having more good options for quality candidates eliminates the risk of vote splitting between candidates with like platforms or candidates from similar communities or backgrounds. I love the opportunity to vote the way I do in my Minneapolis local races by ranking candidates who share great ideas for enacting positive change for people in my community. We need a strong community-minded task force to ensure those voices are heard and the opportunity to create a system that works for all is advanced. It is with your help that we can do some real good for communities across Minnesota. Thank you for your time and your attention.
Thank you for your testimony. You. The next testifier is Storm Novak, and after Storm Novak will be Henry Jimenez. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Storm Novak. Good morning, legislators, staffers, and members of the public. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify on a topic that I'm truly very passionate about and something that I believe is the greatest step that we can take forward to ensure fairer and more representative elections for the future. I'm a college student at Mankato in House District 18B, home of Representative Frederick. My district, like many others, is home to an overwhelming body of young voters, and those young voters would love to see statewide ranked choice voting become a reality for Minnesota. We believe in this electoral reform because its very essence is to ensure that the interest of the majority of voters is represented within our elections. I originally got my start in political advocacy working on a campaign in rural Minnesota in District 11B, home to Representative Nelson. That's where I first came face to face with a constituent who flat out refused to vote. And I asked them why. They told me in plain and simple terms that they did not feel like any of the candidates represented them. And that is fair. Many people want more choice. We know that it has been proven that ranked choice voting encourages a greater diversity of candidates to run for office and a greater diversity of choices. With ranked choice voting, everyone has a chance to vote for a candidate that they feel can actually represent them without having to worry about spoiler candidates or the concept of throwing away their vote. And we can see this in effect within Minneapolis, where we've seen two black transgender individuals elected to the Minneapolis City Council, whereas under a winner-take-all system, those underrepresented, marginalized groups struggle to find any representation in government. Ranked choice voting is one of, if not the best things that we can do to guarantee a more representative and fair election process for the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. The final testifier on the supporter side is Henry Jimenez. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Henry Jimenez. I'm here to express my strong support for House File 2486, which provides an option for all local jurisdictions to adopt ranked choice voting if they wish and establish a task force to recommend how RCV would be implemented in state and federal elections. Remember, if they wish, this is important. RCV is proven to promote more inclusive representation in higher turnout elections, and this is exactly what we need right now in our democracy. This is what our BIPOC communities need. This is what everyone in Minnesota needs. I also applaud the bill for creating a task force of stakeholders that will have the time and opportunity to assess, deliberate, and ultimately recommend how RCV will work at state level. I'm thrilled that the bill includes representation from the state ethnic councils. As the former executive director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, this is exactly the kind of representation needed on task forces created by the legislature. Minnesota is in a strong position to lead on this pro-voter initiative, and the task force is the right vehicle to engage stakeholders in the process and determine the procedures and standards and timelines for statewide RCV in the most effective and timely way possible. Leading is what Minnesota does best, and now is the moment for us to continue to show the rest of the nation how to advance a democracy that is inclusive, participatory, representative, and responsive for all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the testimony from the supporters of the bill. And I will add they came in well under the 20 minutes allocated, so I didn't need to cut anybody off. The next testifier is Secretary of State Steve Simon. Welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. It's an honor to be here today to testify on this bill as amended. The amendment has made significant improvements to the legislation, and I really want to say hats off to you, Mr. Chair, hats off to Representative Frazier for working with us on language that we think could work here. Notice that I am in a speaking order that is a little bit unique. I am neither affiliated with the proponents nor the opponents, and that's because I'm asking everyone just for a second, just for a minute, to put on hold your thoughts about the merits of ranked choice voting. Do you think it's great? Do you think it's not so great? Because I'm here to occupy a specific lane, and that is the administrative lane. How could this actually come to be? How could this actually happen? How could it actually be implemented? And from that standpoint, I have to tell you, I think I owe you my best judgment. And from an administrative standpoint, my judgment is that Minnesota is not yet ready for statewide ranked choice voting. Leave aside for a minute the arguments about whether it's a good thing to do or a bad thing to do. I can tell you that it's an extraordinarily complicated thing to do. There are a lot of moving parts. You've heard, including from a very esteemed guest here, that Maine and Alaska do this statewide. But Minnesota is not Maine and Alaska. Those states have a very centralized election system with an election authority centralized at the state that does a lot more than we're used to in Minnesota. Those states do not have counties. They don't have them at all. We do have counties in Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, our system, our election system, is very much county-based. So statewide ranked choice voting could require changing the basic architecture of the Minnesota election system as we know it. Now, I'm here because I think, and I know Representative Frazier thinks, we could get to a place where that is feasible. but only if we engage in a thorough and careful examination of the many structures and rules that would have to change to accommodate a statewide ranked choice voting system. The bill as amended can get us there, I'm here to say. First and most importantly, it creates a task force that will bring a diversity of elections administrators and advocates together from across the state to assess and make recommendations both on the statewide ranked choice voting provisions as well as on the provisions allowing for the adoption of local ranked choice voting in conjunction with a state general election. I know that's a mouthful, but right now, and forgive me, I didn't hear some of the earlier testimony, maybe it's been explained, but in Minnesota, we have five cities right now that do it. They have chosen to do it. But they all do it in odd year elections. We have not yet in Minnesota had the situation where a city has chosen to do it on its own for its own folks in conjunction with an even year, a statewide general election where we elect the governor or the president or all the rest. That's what I'm referring to. So bringing elections administrators together with advocates to assess the feasibility, the challenges, and the necessary procedural and law changes before the state implements these changes is critical. And since my time here in the Minnesota House, serving in the Minnesota House, I've strongly and still strongly support the ability of all local jurisdictions to adopt ranked choice voters if they determine that it's the right thing for their community and the right thing for their voters. But of course, we need to make sure that we've thought through and addressed all the potential impacts on our election system, particularly for those local elections held in conjunction with the state general election, the idea that I'm talking about, a city doing it in the same year that we elect a governor or a president and so forth. I would have preferred personally that the legislation delay the implementation of local option ranked choice voting held in an even year until the task force could examine potential issues, but I appreciate that the bill as amended delays the implementation of ranked choice voting by statutory cities until 2025, which does give us until 2026 to determine how local option ranked choice voting can best be achieved in conjunction with a state election. Since the legislation presumes that we will have a local option ranked choice voting election in conjunction with a state election in 2026, I just want to emphasize how important it is for legislators to take seriously the recommendations that will be coming out of the task force, because those recommendations will likely include proposed changes to state election law. There are large policy and practical considerations that I'm hopeful the task force can assess regarding a local ranked choice voting election that coincides with the statewide general elections. Things like ballot order, allowing cities to deviate from state standards in an even year. Then there's the issue of cities like St. Cloud, which fall into more than one county. St. Cloud falls into three different counties. And the practical challenges of potentially having a second ballot card. In other words, one ballot card that's ranked choice voting, and another ballot card for all the other races that isn't. We just have to think those things through. All of these issues and more have to be addressed by the task force before we set the implementation date. And we can almost certainly solve these issues for local level ranked choice voting contests. But when it comes to elections, as you know better than anyone, members, because you sit on this committee, the details really do matter. And we should ensure that we're addressing these issues in the task force before implementation. Again, I want to say, I can't say enough about Representative Frazier's leadership, about his flexibility, about his willingness to listen and to hear and take seriously the concerns being raised, not just by us, but by elections administrators across the state. And this amendment, this bill is amended, makes significant changes in response to those concerns that I and others have expressed. So I want to thank him. I want to thank everyone in this room for their activism, no matter what side you're on. I'm occupying a very specific space, talking about a very specific lane. But thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you for your testimony, Secretary Simon. We will turn now to people who have signed up to testify in opposition to the bill. And there are several. So first on the list is Brian Cook, and after Brian Cook will be Jonathan Anastad. And if you could keep your testimony to approximately 2 minutes, that will enable us to stick within that 20-minute guideline. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, members of the Elections, Finance, and Policy Committee, Representative Frazier. My name is Brian Cook, and I'm the Director of Elections Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to express some of our concerns with House File 2486. The Minnesota Chamber, which represents more than 6,300 businesses with over 500,000 employees, supports changes to Minnesota's state election process to allow for greater voter contact and participation. We believe that Minnesota should maintain the traditional method of balloting, where voters select one candidate per office sought in single-seat elections or a set number of candidates in multiple-seat elections. While RCV is promoted as a means to reduce polarization, increase participation, and lower costs, academic studies and actual experience call into question those conclusions. Minnesota's experience with RCV bears this out. Further, RCV presents voters who have just one preference in a race with a dilemma. Either vote for a candidate whom the voter does not know or support, or risk having their voter power diminished by a person who makes more than one selection. The bill also delegates the work of developing the implementation of a statewide RCV system to an ever-growing 26-member task force. This task force has representation from local units of government, labor unions, and others. While it has outsized representation from other organizations that advocate for RCV, the business community is notably left out with no seat at the table. It is our strongly held belief that Minnesota businesses remain active and engaged in elections, not only because they represent a collective voice for the private sector, just as labor unions represent a collective voice for their workers, but because policy and political decisions impact them just as much. Finally, our state's participation in elections and our election laws and practices have been held up as a point of pride nationally, rightfully so. Minnesota has a long-standing tradition of requiring bipartisan support for significant election law changes, a standard that has promoted stability and helped Minnesotans retain their voice at critical times. We believe bipartisanship should remain the standard in this policy area, especially when it comes to fundamental changes to the way in which we conduct elections. Significant modifications to our electoral system that are not consensus-based will lead to a back and forth of changes based on whoever is in power, which is a result that we believe is not in the best interest of Minnesotans. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Jonathan Anisted, and after Jonathan Anisted will be Linda Blair. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good, how are you doing? Thank you, Chair Freiberg, House members, members of this committee, and friends such as Lee Torgelson. My name is Jonathan Anisted. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Election Integrity.org organization. It's a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to all aspects of elections operations here in Minnesota. A recent Real Clear Politics poll found that 62% of Americans are very concerned or somewhat concerned about the state of elections in this country. Thank you, by the way, to Secretary of State Simon to suggest to slow this ranked choice voting issue down. Ranked choice voting is not the solution to an already ailing election system here in Minnesota. It is a solution in search of a problem that it does not solve. It will only make a bad system worse. I've been involved in Minnesota elections since the Coleman Franken and Emmer Dayton recounts as a team lead. I've been a volunteer election judge, poll watcher, and now I chair the largest volunteer election integrity organization in the state with over 250 people statewide. We were formed in February of 2021, and I have 8 subcommittees working on all aspects of election integrity, including ranked choice voting. Please visit our website when you get a chance. I encourage you to look into the formation and background of FairVote, who testifies here today. They are well-funded to the tune of $1.3 million dedicated in the calendar year 2023 to push ranked choice voting in Minnesota. Their funding all comes from left-leaning dark money organizations. Please ask yourself these questions as you contemplate ranked choice voting. Why is the DFL pushing so hard to adopt ranked choice voting in Minnesota with no Republican sponsors? Why is FairVote so well funded with full-time employees dedicated only to this effort in Minnesota? I ask you to please educate yourselves as to how ranked choice voting works. Please listen to the other testifiers today and read what they've written about the difficulties with the ranked choice system voting. It is an overly complicated system that does not solve any of the problems here in Minnesota. It has not taken the rancor and partisanship out of municipal elections, as you've heard here today. All you have to do is look at some of the recent, very contentious municipal elections in Minneapolis. And most importantly, and I want to make this point very clear, ranked choice voting does not adhere to the constitutionally guaranteed one person, one vote, America was written on.
Okay, if you could wrap
Thank
up
you very much for your time today.
Thank you. And just for future testifiers, you know, we have a policy here not to kind of impugn the motives of people or organizations, whether within the legislature or outside of the legislature, so please refrain from doing that. The next testifier is Linda Blair, and after Linda Blair will be Mark Bonhorst. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Linda Blair. I'm a Bloomington resident and election judge. I believe elections should be uncomplicated. Ranked choice voting complicates the process. As a Bloomington election judge, I saw firsthand that many voters were unclear and confused. Those that did understand this process expressed frustration over its complications. I personally witnessed many spoiled ballots from diverse voters who use English as their second language. Ranking the votes caused frustration and took them longer to complete their ballot. I even witnessed one frustrated voter have their ballot spit back out of the tabulator again and then look, just say, it doesn't matter, and walk out in frustration. Ranked choice voting will disenfranchise voters. Voting should be simple. Under ranked choice voting, how many pages will each voter have to wade through on a presidential ballot for them to be able to have the space to rank that each race? It will be very cumbersome for the voter, the candidate, and the election staff. Most races go beyond that first round, leaving the voter who ranked a candidate in only one round in jeopardy of exhausting their ballot, while the other voters who chose the loser of each round may get a second, third, or fourth vote through redistribution. I believe we should maintain our one person, one vote, because it is a true reflection of the people's choice, not some convoluted ranking formula. Proponents of the House File 2486 say ranked choice voting will make elections less divisive. Ranked choice voting doesn't change how campaign dollars are spent on negative ads. Spending decisions by the campaigns and special interest groups make elections divisive, not the marking and the counting of the ballots. Ranked choice voting will not make elections less divisive. It hasn't worked that way in Bloomington, at least. It only changes how voters mark a ballot and those ballots are counted. Why are we pushing to change the Minnesota voting laws this year? The Secretary of State isn't asking for this change. Regular Minnesotans aren't asking for this change. This is the agenda of one special interest group. Your job is to represent all Minnesotans. Rushing to enact this law, a law requiring an unelected task force many years to reveals the inappropriateness of this change in our voting laws. This is a time to regain the confidence and trust of voters, not to rewrite and write a sloppy law. I ask you to reject ranked choice voting for Minnesota. I thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Mark Bonhorst, and after Mark Bonhorst will be David Clark. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members of the committee. Mark Bonhorst from Minneapolis. I'm really more in Steve Simon's lane. I have a particular matter to bring before the committee. I have been researching and studying presidential election reform for 6 years, so I want to talk about what ranked choice voting bill and other approaches might mean for presidential elections. A voting system that assures that presidential electors are chosen by a majority of the voters is the single most important near-term reform of the Electoral College that is achievable. Ranked choice voting is a great way to do that, but implementation will be delayed at least one election cycle and maybe more. That delay is not necessary. The task force should be empowered at least to consider an alternative that could be in effect in 2024 for presidential elections. That alternative is approval voting. Administratively, that alternative requires one change on existing ballots. Change vote for one to vote for one or more. Nothing else about the election system changes. That's it. Voters vote for more than one favored ticket, add up the votes. The ticket with the most votes wins. It's called an election. Three key points. One, impeccable constitutional credentials. Approval voting was the founders' own alternative voting system for presidential elections. It was discussed favorably at the Constitutional Convention by the people who wrote the Electoral College, and it was embodied in the Electoral College and was used during our first four elections. Point two, equally effective. These two systems are equally effective in avoiding the spoiler effect. Under both, the votes of all voters who approve either of the leading candidates are counted. Three, the kicker, timing. Approval voting is so simple, it probably could be implemented in 2024 for presidential elections. Ranked choice voting will not. I think if we can implement the most important achievable reform in the Electoral College now rather than later, we should do it now. And I hope the committee and the members of the audience agree.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is David Clark, and after David Clark will be Annette Meeks. Welcome to the committee. Once you've had a seat, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is David Clark. I'm executive chair of a group called Residents for Better Bloomington. We're a Bloomington-based nonpartisan group that's a nonprofit as well. And we're a watchdog group. We watch what happens at the city council. We watch what happens at the school board and at the state. You know, when ranked choice voting first started being brought up in Bloomington, we knew it was not popular. In fact, FairVote had to spend $165,000 in a slick marketing campaign in order to get people to vote for it. And even with that effort, it only won by a 0.2% margin in the election in 2020. So out of 50,000 votes, it only won by a 96-vote margin. Our group thought that that was indicative of the fact that at least Bloomington was divided on it. So we decided to put forth a petition last year to get it back on the ballot. But we were shocked with the results. We knocked on 10,000 doors, 5,000 people answered, and 3,700 people signed our petition to get ranked choice voting back on the ballot and get it hopefully voted out. That's 74% roughly of the population randomly selected. So any time of day that we went out, any day of the week, any part of town we went to, the results were the same. This is deeply unpopular in Bloomington. It's the same margin that Duluth voted it out or voted it down several years ago. Minnetonka, that city of Minnetonka actually did a resident survey. 48% of the residents said they wanted to retain the current traditional voting system. Only 22% of the respondents in Minnetonka said that they wanted ranked choice voting. This is in the August 15th minutes of the City Council of Minnetonka of last year. So you can fool yourselves into believing that this is a popular way to go with polls that come out that are carefully crafted, that are carefully worded, and people answer it in a way that seems to indicate that the majority of the people want ranked choice voting. That is not the case. The ultimate poll we took the ultimate poll, which is last year, going door to door, thousands and thousands of people we talked to, 74% of the Bloomington residents that we talked to said, we want ranked choice voting back in the ballot and we want it out. That's the results that we have. So I would ask you to listen to those results, which are from real people randomly selected in the city of Bloomington and indicative of where people's real thoughts are on this voting system, not some poll that's only being given to certain people and carefully worded. So thank you very much.
Yep, thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Annette Meeks, and after Annette Meeks will be Karen Miller. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm the founder and CEO of the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
My name is Annette Meeks.
Maybe still a little closer, if you can.
My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm the founder and CEO of the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota. We devote a lot of time and attention to government transparency, which is what brings me before the committee today. Since the divisive outcome and aftermath of the 2020 election, I don't need to tell you we're living in a difficult time for our republic. Our elections are all too often surrounded by controversy, whether real or not, that arouse partisan suspicion and demands for greater transparency and accountability. History has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that ranked choice voting will do nothing to achieve greater accountability, better and cleaner campaigns, or greater transparency in future elections. As a matter of fact, you only have to consider 3 to 4 recent real-life experiences with ranked choice voting to understand why this is a very risky proposition that has been studied, and the studies show it doesn't live up to the expectations set forth by the supporters. Let's look at Alaska, the second state to adopt ranked choice voting statewide. In their 2020 special election, nearly 15,000 voters were disenfranchised when their legitimately cast ballots were not counted. They were considered exhausted ballots under ranked choice voting rules, meaning that the candidates they voted for were no longer in contention for office. Those 15,000 disenfranchised voters were a considerable portion of the electorate that voted in that election. Now Alaska is voting to repeal ranked choice voting. But it isn't just Alaska. It also happened in Maine, the first state to adopt ranked choice voting statewide. In the 2018 Democratic primary for Maine's 2nd Congressional District, nearly 9,000 voters had their voices silent by ballot exhaustion. Maine voters, too, are in the process of organizing to repeal ranked choice voting. In local elections, Sandy, Utah had 23,000 citizens participate in their 2019 mayoral election before ranked choice voting. In 2021, with ranked choice voting, voters were down to only 21,000 participating, and only 17,000 of those voters had a say in the final tally. Another 4,000 voters were disenfranchised and didn't have their ballots count. After that election, 60% of Sandy, Utah voters said, quote, "We dislike the system," and they now say ranked choice voting should not be used in future Sandy City municipal elections. I could go on, but I'll leave you with the worst possible outcome during these politically charged days. And that's a message from Alameda County, California. In their 2022 school board election, Alameda County's software was inadvertently configured wrong so that elections used under ranked choice voting, over 200 of them were counted incorrectly.
If you could wrap up your testimony, that would be
As great. A result, the wrong candidate was announced the winner. 2 months later, they had to go do a dizzying recount to discover that someone else actually won the election under ranked choice voting. While our elections have many procedural issues to be addressed, to ensure future elections provide greater transparency, ranked choice voting isn't one of these options and isn't worthy of consideration in our great state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Karen Miller, and after Karen Miller will be Ellen Cousins. Welcome to the committee. Once you've had a seat, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Karen Miller. I'm an involved citizen and election judge from Dakota County. Thank you for considering these following questions about ranked choice voting. First of all, why are we considering changing our one person, one vote system to one that is more confusing, diminishes voter confidence, and decreases turnout? The instructions for filling out a ranked choice ballot are not easy to explain nor easy to follow, which disenfranchises voters with English as a second language and the elderly and leads to a higher error rate. It also depends on machines programmed with algorithms to reallocate votes, which leads to greater irregularities and voter mistrust. All of this results in lower voter turnout, as is the case in Minneapolis and St. Paul, both of which have used ranked choice voting in local elections for more than a decade. Both lag behind other major metropolitan cities in voter turnout. Why are we considering changing our one person, one vote system to one that actually excludes votes? With ranked choice voting, rather than counting every vote, some voters' ballots are exhausted and their voice is not expressed in the final result. For example, in a San Francisco 2010 Board of Supervisors election, after 20 rounds of tabulation, more votes were thrown out than were counted in the final result. Why are we considering a system which has the propensity to take the victory from a candidate who initially earned the greatest number of votes and award it to a less favored candidate? One example is the 2018 second congressional district election in Maine. The Republican outperformed the Democrat in the first round, yet 8,000 votes were thrown out and the Democrat declared the winner. Another example of this is the Alaska 2022 special election in which the Democrat won, despite the fact that over 60% of the voters voted Republican in the first round and more than 11,000 votes were eliminated. How can this process possibly be considered fair and equitable? Minnesota cannot afford to abandon our one-person, one-vote system for one that will be more confusing, less efficient, disenfranchise voters, and create manipulated false majorities. I urge a no vote on 2486. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Ellen Cousins, and after Ellen Cousins will be Dale Witherington. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Ellen Cousins. And thank you for this opportunity to speak against HF 2486. Our voting system, deemed one of the best in the nation, is coming under attack by a nationally funded group whose mission is to change how we vote. This group makes many false claims and hides behind their false slogan to protect democracy. How can an election system that does the following protect democracy? This well-funded group claims with ranked choice voting, the winner is chosen by a majority of the voters. Fact, the needed majority number decreases with each round. Many voters do not have a voice in the final round as their ballot has been eliminated. When Mayor Jacob Frey won in the sixth round of voting,
22,835 votes did not have a voice in the final choice. I believe every citizen should have the opportunity to vote on the final candidates, which is how our long-established fair voting system works in Minnesota. This is how we truly protect democracy. The supposed benefits are imaginary. California Governor Newsom stated the promise that ranked choice voting leads to greater democracy is not necessarily fulfilled. Ranked choice voting leads to voter suppression. Many voters do not have the resources to learn how to use RCV or research multiple candidates for each race and have sadly stopped voting. Under RCV, many cities have seen a depressed voter turnout in communities of color. RCV has no benefit to our state and certainly doesn't merit any of our precious resources to form a task force to study it, especially a task force that has any representation from FairVote or others who have financial interests in the passage of the bill. During a failed campaign for RCV, Walter Mondale stated, "Vote no on ranked choice voting." I also urge you to please vote no and keep our voting system fair, easy, less expensive, and one of the best in the nation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. The final testifier is Dale Witherington. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Frazier, thank you. My name is Dale Witherington. Some of you know me as a volunteer chaplain on both sides of the aisle here in the state of Minnesota since 2012. And I'm here to speak in opposition of HF 2486 and to make one request as you probably go forward with this anyway. My opposition is based on data demonstrating the failure of RCV in communities and states across the country after they implemented the procedure and in some cases have already repealed the procedure. It's probable you will also be in direct violation of a Supreme Court ruling of which you may be unaware. Let's start there. RCV appears to violate a year 2000 SCOTUS case, the Democrat Party of California versus Jones. SCOTUS ruled 7-2 that there is a First Amendment fundamental right of a political party to have the party choose the candidate of their choice for a general election. RCV eliminates that. It is a constitutional right. It's a fundamental right of the association. RCV violates the constitutional right according to SCOTUS. Number two, as has been stated, former Vice President Walter Mondale, a Democrat, current Governor of California Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, the ACLU, the New York Democrats, the New York NAACP, the Black, Latino, and Asian caucus of the New York City Council all agree with the following. RCV creates less transparency in the voting process. Do we want less transparency? RCV creates voter disenfranchisement. Do we want less people voting? RCV creates voter suppression. RCV, according to the NAACP and those that I've mentioned above, is oppressive to people of color. And it does not lead to greater democracy, which, by the way, we are a constitutional republic. We are not a democracy. In closing, my request, since you are likely to go forward with this bill anyway, please include in your RCV statewide implementation task force some who are not necessarily all in with RCV. At least provide for parity and balance in the debate. Remember the words of the Declaration of Independence that, quote, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The governed are hurt by RCV. Don't oppress those who put you in office. Don't suppress
wrap
the vote.
Testimony.
Vote no on HF 2486. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the testimony to the bill. So we will turn to member discussion. Representative Davis. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, I would just like to point out that one of the testifiers who were supposedly in opposition to this was not in opposition. He said he did not oppose ranked choice voting, and then he went on to be a proponent of preferred voting, which ranked choice voting is considered to be preferred voting by many. And so I would ask that we, in fairness, could we have one more testifier in opposition?
I didn't hear it the same way. I'm not exactly certain what preferred voting is testifier was speaking about, but I did hear him say he's not a fan of ranked choice voting as this bill put forward. I'd also point out testifiers in favor of the bill spoke for approximately 17 minutes, and the opponents of the bill spoke for 23 minutes, and I don't know of a way to, like, fairly choose one person among everyone to who gets the right to speak, you know, when we've tried to be as consistent as possible telling people that we've reached our limit of testifiers. But I appreciate the suggestion, Representative Davis.
Well, thank you for the consideration, Mr. Chair.
Did you have a question?
Oh, yes.
Bill also? Okay, you may proceed.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would like to, yes, thank you, Representative Frazier. So there was, I watched an interview from Kara Levin, a MinnPost journalist, and maybe he's here, I don't know, but Eric Black, who was in favor of ranked choice voting. He said, I suppose the biggest argument against it is that it's another level of confusion, possibly, and even discourage people from voting if they feel overwhelmed by the requirement to have three choices. So, I mean, are you confident that voters are going to be well informed on all of their choices on the ballot?
Representative Frazier.
I think a big part of this with the task force and the conversation going to be had, I think one of the recommendations that's going to come out of there is how do we make sure we educate the populace on how to effectively go into the booth and use ranked choice voting. I think that's something that the Congresswoman talked about with the resources that Alaska put into their education process. And I think when you invest in that part of it, I'm fairly confident that because it will require candidates to engage outside their base with a broader coalition, I'm fairly confident that voters will be informed on those top three choices that they have to make, yes.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Don't candidates already have that ability to reach out outside of their base, like in a primary?
Representative Frazier.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to have the ability, and it's another to actually function in that way. In a practical sense, it's our democracy right now is not functioning in a way that candidates are reaching out beyond their base. I mean, that's just the reality that we live in right now.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have any bipartisan support for this within the Minnesota House of Representatives?
Thank you, Representative Davis. There was, if members of the audience could please silence their phone, that would be appreciated. Did you hear the question, or Representative Frazier, or were you distracted by the rooster?
Thank you, thank you, Representative Frazier.
Okay. Frazier.
I was tracking the rooster, and I also tracked the question.
It's impressive.
At the moment, I haven't checked recently. I don't believe that we have a GOP member signed onto the bill, but we are still going through the process, and I never rule out that we won't get there, you know, as we go through the process. And I, as you know, you've seen me bring a bill to the floor that had no GOP support until it got to the floor, but it did have GOP votes when we left the floor. So I'm confident.
Yeah. Representative Davis, final follow-up maybe? Okay, I'll give you two more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, maybe I can get one final here. You do not have bipartisan support in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Not one single Republican has signed on to it. And I've asked our entire caucus if anyone is in support of it, and they are not. And so we heard from Secretary of State Steve Simon He said that this is going to structurally change our elections, and in my opinion, this is going to fundamentally change our elections in the state. He also pointed out that these cities have chosen to do it, and here we're going in the direction of the state making that choice for everyone locally. And so we're robbing the local authorities of their choice if this goes through. So you don't have bipartisan support for it, and it's going to structurally and fundamentally change our elections. And I just, if it's going to change our elections that much, Representative Frazier, I would encourage you to get bipartisan support, because right now you do not have it, and I do not think that we should be making a decision when it comes to our elections without bipartisan support from the people that this state elected. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Just to clarify the record, if you look to the delete all amendment on line 8.2, it does say the political subdivisions may adopt. So this is a local option. They're not required to adopt ranked choice voting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that clarification.
Thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier. So on this committee, and I appreciated Representative Bonner's comments earlier. So, you know, she was speaking on the last bill, you know, that we really need to be doing things that's going to create integrity and security of the vote. And I agree with her 100%. So when we started on this committee, I think this is what we all agreed on, the committee, that elections absolutely have to, three things, that elections absolutely have to be bipartisan, right? They have to be secure, that we all believe that this is a secure election so that we have that confidence to vote. And then the last thing is that we have confidence, and that is allowing us to all feel like we have the vote. So with that being said, Representative Frazier, Alaska, we had the Congresswoman. I was actually going to ask her a question, but she left. So in the Alaskan election, they, as we know, moved to RCV. And I'm just going to quote from a couple of kind of liberal papers, The Hill, November 23rd. Alaska set to announce results from confusing RCV. November 23rd. The election was November 8th. Alaska Beacon, November 30th. Alaska finally certifies final election results, but three state house races have more hurdles. November 30th. Again, November 8th was the election. So my question, Representative Frazier, 22 days after the election, if our goals are to be bipartisan, secure, and for the public to have confidence in our elections, when this is the result of Alaska, how can we in Minnesota be supporting ranked choice voting?
Representative Frazier.
You're asking how can you asking me the question?
I'm saying that was the actual results from Alaska. That was the actual timeline. Hmm. And now they're working to repeal it. Why are we considering a bill of voting that failed in Alaska?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Altendorf, I can't speak to whether or not it failed or not. It hasn't been repealed. What I can speak to, if you want me to opine on the timeline, I think you should always take the time to get it right. I think that's important, which is also the reason why we're implementing this task force to work out the details, which I think are critical to make sure we get this right.
Representative Altendorf, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, on this task force, can you talk to me about the guarantees that we are going to have election officials, county auditors, and people that are involved with the election process, on this committee, no political people that are being elected in any way. Can you give me some sort of support or let me know exactly what this task force is going to be built up of?
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. I'll turn it to Representative Frazier as well, but since you didn't since you weren't the only one who drafted the amendment that we adopted, there is a majority. I will just respond first that there's a majority of election administrators, you know, nonpartisan election administrators on the task force, 13 out of 25 members. I don't know if you hadn't. I was trying to add it up really quickly, but I don't have the exact line in front of me at this point, but wanted to mention that. I don't know if you have any follow-up, Representative Frazier.
No, that is accurate. It is a majority of election officials. That is in conversation with our Secretary of State, who spoke earlier about the important role that his office will play in this in terms of being an administrator and making sure we answer those critical questions that need to be answered. I will say that we also want to make sure that we have representation from the community on those groups. And when I speak about that, you've heard people testify about voter suppression and things of that nature. We want to make sure that we have voices on the committee that can ensure that the conversations around how we're going to educate communities to ensure that we don't have any issues with folks being disenfranchised are important as well. So we're going to continue to work as we move forward to make sure we get the right balance and right makeup on the task force, because I think that's important for Minnesota.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in my final comments, we heard that this for vote, this organization, or Fair Vote, I'm sorry, that they are very, very well funded. Very well funded. And a lot of their testimonies, anyone can go back and look at them. They're based off of emotion and fear. They also play the emotions of the public, that we don't like negative campaigning, which is, of course, nobody likes the negative campaigning. But I ask people to consider, consider the level of that this organization has been funded. It also was brought up that we don't want to have spoiler candidates. And I would say that ranked choice voting, actually, if anything I've ever seen, does bring in spoiler candidates so that they can be funded. Because, earlier, this is really interesting to me, but this committee, we've discussed how we didn't like in a couple of the presidential elections that the president was not voted in by the popular vote, the majority vote. And here we go. Ranked choice voting, you could have 33% of the vote, 40% of the vote, and you could be the winner with 70% of the population not picking you as the first candidate. So ranked choice voting actually does bring in spoiler candidates, something like we've never seen before, ever, in our elections. And I just final comment, but we heard testifiers from Bloomington very, very nicely and adequately telling us of how the voters are against this. And so that's a place that tried this. They're against it. And then I'm just going to finish with someone from St. Paul who also has adopted ranked choice voting. And she said, I'm expressing my disagreement for the creation of ranked choice voting. We have it in St. Paul, and all it does is keep the elected officials who receive the most votes after several disqualifying rounds in office. I have asked, this is from a person, I have asked everyone I know who lives in St. Paul, and not one of them admits to voting for Carter or any of the council members in their district. We do not need ranked choice voting to go statewide. So I would ask, I wore green today because it's St. Patrick's Day. The majority party has not allowed us to have amendments, has not agreed on anything, but something this important that in Minnesota we have to have bipartisan support for our elections. I wore green today because I thought I am going to have the luck of Irish today, and we're going to get the Democrats to agree with us just once that we are not going to push against the Minnesota people and do something that the Minnesota people do not want.
Okay. Please hold off on applause. That we don't generally allow that. I saw that, Representative Bliss. I'll still call on you, Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Really, my questions are going to be, just repeated what we have down here. But I think it's important that we bring it up. Why are we doing this? Why are we bringing this forward now? We've got multiple jurisdictions across the country that are voting this out, are calling it into question. Results not coming in for a month after the election. We have voter disenfranchisement run amok in this. When you lose tens of thousands of votes that go towards the final vote, that's voter disenfranchisement. You know, it was brought up that this increases diversity in the candidate pool. I would argue differently. We have year after year after year in the Minnesota House of Representatives have become more diverse without ranked choice voting. This is going to be hugely expensive to our counties. It's going to disenfranchise lots and lots and lots of voters. And I find it interesting, the timing that we're bringing this to committee, because it's going to increase the number of candidates on a ballot. And the very next bill we're going to hear is to cut the number of people on the ballot. So I guess my, well, it's not really a question, it's a comment again. Why? Why now? And I know some people have used local cities as an argument in favor of ranked choice voting. Myself, I would use it as an argument in opposition of ranked choice voting. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Representative Stevenson, did you want to be?
Mr. Chair, I just had a question for you, actually. I just heard that the heard from a member saying that amendments were not allowed. How many amendments were submitted by members of the minority for this bill today?
Representative Stevenson, we don't need to go there, but
I withdraw the question.
I see your point. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I would like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call.
Second, I would like to thank everyone who's shown up today for this hearing. This is really great to have a room full of people discussing this very important issue. You know, I was here during COVID, and nothing like this could happen. So I appreciate being live, face-to-face, and hand-to-hand. And we all learn from this experience, and I want to thank you all for showing up. To the issue, ranked choice voting, we find it will be cumbersome, expensive, slow, not quicker, and difficult. It actually changes the behavior of both candidates and voters. During the, I believe, the most recent campaign for the mayor of Minneapolis, there was an active campaign, and I haven't got the picture with me, but there was a picture of Mayor Fry, and the line on it said, "Don't rank Fry." Well, they're encouraging people not to actually make their first, second, and third choice. They're encouraging them to make, to eliminate a person from the selection because they think it gives them some advantage in this complicated process of counting ranked choice votes. I'm not going to go on forever here. I have a lot of things on my list. Many of them have been expressed by my colleagues. We know that this, at this point, does not have bipartisan support. We don't believe it will improve the integrity of our elections, and we do not believe it will increase public confidence in the results of our elections. I'm going to be voting no, and I suggest the rest of my colleagues and anyone else vote no.
Thank you, Lead Torkelson. Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Frederick, Cedric, Representative Frazier. Sorry, can't quite get it out this morning. My apologies on that. I just wanted to kind of ground us a little bit. First, I just want to say that, you know, we talked here today about if someone chooses a candidate that doesn't ultimately succeed in the end, that they've been disenfranchised or that their vote hasn't been counted. And I just want to say, as we do elections today, if your candidate doesn't have enough votes to win, your candidate doesn't have enough votes to win. That remains the same regardless of the method of voting. Does that mean that every single voter who doesn't pick the winner has been disenfranchised? I don't think that's the argument that we're trying to make, and I don't think that's a really fair equivalency. So we probably should be thoughtful about our rhetoric on that. And also, I just wanted to say there was an implication about going against the one vote, one voice principle. And regardless of the method of voting, every vote that comes forward only gets counted one time. It gets counted as one voice, right? So in the ultimate results, we aren't giving someone more voice. Each individual gets the same amount of voice that they've always had. So I just want to be thoughtful about that as well, that rhetoric is not accurate. But let's get back to grounding on this bill specifically and what it's doing. This bill is allowing, on great measure, the local option. We talk a lot about local option here. It gives those cities who choose to have ranked choice voting the ability to choose it for themselves. They vote on it. So I think we want to also be careful that we're not implying that this is being foisted upon someone. It is not. It is a choice that folks can make. And secondly, the bill itself has a robust task force to explore this question so that should a city choose this as a method, because they do want to see a behavior in the change of candidates. They do want to see candidates who are seeking out folks on a deeper level, across party lines. They still can do that, and if that feels right to them. But it's also a task force that says, if we're going to do this, let's do it in a smart way. Let's do our homework. Let's make sure that we avoid some of the pitfalls of some of these cities who've had it rolled out and maybe didn't get it right out of the gate, and avoid those complications or those frustrations. And I think that just makes sense, because it is important to have a sense of security in the way things operate. And so, you know, making sure that we're doing our due diligence in advance, that we're using the lessons learned from other cities across the state to actually be able to roll this out in a smart way for those cities who choose to opt in, I think is the right thing to do. We do see more cities expressing a desire to move in this direction. And so it makes sense as elected officials that we say, look, we want this to be safe and secure. We want people to have confidence. And so we want to do our homework first and make sure that we do it in the right way. So I appreciate that, Representative Frazier, and just wanted to quick bring us back to grounding. Thank you.
Thank you. No additional members are on the list, so I'll just take a moment as chair once again to thank everybody on both sides who came here. I agree with Lead Torkelson completely that it is great to see such a big turnout and interest in this topic. It is a really interesting one, frankly. Representative Frazier, thank you for all the work you've done on this. I know it hasn't been easy. I know there's a lot of people with a lot of different views on this on both sides of the aisle. I think you've done a tremendous amount of hard work trying to get to a point where there's consensus, at least support for it, that it will move forward. Maybe I should not call it consensus based on what some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle said. But I do think this is a reasonable approach that you're taking in this bill. I think the local option is something we've been talking about for years and has been out there for a while. We know five cities have this, and it's generally worked pretty well there. I think ranked choice voting is a system that has the potential to reduce the spoiler effect, to increase positive campaigning, and I think giving cities the option of adopting this system has a lot of potential to make our elections more interesting. And I also think the task force is a really important component of this bill as well. I think it's balanced. It has lots of expertise from nonpartisan election administrators, and I really look forward to seeing what they will come up with. So with that, Representative Frazier, I will let you make the closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree. This is wonderful, because this is the democratic process. This is democracy. We're here, we're having this debate, and we're hearing voices from either side of where they land on this issue, and I think that's important. That's what this democracy is about. I did want to point out just one fact. Representative Altendorf, you talked about St. Paul. I would encourage that member to get outside their circle and talk to more people, because when Mayor Carter won his election, it was on the first ballot both times, and he got over 50% of the vote. So they may not have voted for him, but a lot of people did. So I hope they would get out and talk to more of their neighbors. I think that's important. That's also what democracy is about as well. This is simply to put a task force together to ensure that we get this right, to ensure that we're going to provide the local option, and so that when those local jurisdictions decide to do it, we will have answered many of the questions that they need answered to ensure that they can do this in a way to where there's no confusion, to where we continue to have the high voter participation that we have in the state of Minnesota. And that is one of the most important things to me as I carry this bill. That's one of the reasons why we're operating in this fashion. I'm taking in information from all stakeholders to try to make sure we do this the best way possible. That's it. In my district, there are cities that want to do this that can't right now by law. There are cities that are outside of my district around the state that want to do this right now but can't do this by law. We want to provide them the option to do this, and we want to make sure that they have the tools that are necessary to ensure that they do it right. That's the point of it all. So I'd urge members to vote yes on this, and let's keep this process moving so we can continue to have this conversation.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. With that, I will renew the motion that House File 2486, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. A roll call has been requested, so the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Yes.
Minority Leader Torkelson.
No.
Representative Ogbaje. Representative Altendorf.
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bliss?
No.
Representative Coulter?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Purcell?
Aye.
Representative Quam is excused. Representative Stevenson?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion is approved. The bill is referred. Thank you, everybody who came for this bill. If you're interested in sticking around, great. But if you are planning on leaving for the next bill, if you could try to do so a little quietly, let's see how. Okay, we'll be in recess for about 2 or maybe 5 minutes.
Let me know if you want another donut.
Nice try.
Do you want a donut?
You've earned one, Representative.
Because everyone's so loud.
Oh, yeah.
It's great to see a voice. It's great.
This is the best.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah,
it's
the best.
Easily. There's a small patch between.
Yeah, that made it into packets.
I love it. The Simon Brown part is polished, frosting the top.
Yeah.
I oppose Rachel Jones voting. Thank you. Yeah.
Is that posted on the committee website too? Okay, might need to highlight that one.
Yeah. What testimony should be?
Yeah. It's true. All right, I guess as long as we're taking a break.
Accepted.
Hello.
Oh, hi. You're Mr. Representative Frederick, right?
Oh, I am not Representative Frederick. I'm Mike Wilson in L.A. Representative Frederick is over there. Do you need something?
Oh, I was just going to give him something. I wrote him a letter.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I think he just stepped out, but he should be over here.
Yeah.
We did.
What?
He was looking for Luke, but we ended up taking a break. As you know, that's a break.
They're not cousins.
Yeah.
But nobody's with Natty.
Oh, no, he was the
Miss Elections. The
second guy. Second guy, sorry. Yeah, it checks out. They're just like, oh, this is not what I was looking for, but interesting.
I don't like the faces.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Okay. If everyone over in this section who's not sticking around could please step out, we're going to start in a minute or two. Thank you. What is that?
Yeah, that's a tracker from like me, because that's on the
main tracker. Yeah, you set back on the team
for whatever you got. One you can't go with whatever.
Last call for people to please step out so we can continue the hearing. We kind of need him to start. Yeah.
He's overrated.
Where is he?
I think he stepped out for.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yes.
Trigger the roost.
Okay. Luke, you want to go over there? Okay, I'm going to call the meeting back to order. Could everyone please take conversations outside? So the last bill on the agenda is House File 2802. Representative Frederick, would you like to move that House File 2802 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So Representative Frederick has moved that House File 2802 be laid over for possible inclusion. Did you want to move the A2 amendment at this point?
Yes, please.
Sure. Would you like to describe the A2 amendment at all?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. The legislation is currently proposed would change both ways of becoming a major party status. The amendment, the A2 amendment, would actually change on page 2, line 5, revert to original language. So the only change in law that this legislation would make then would be regarding major party status would be the follow over from getting 10%, raising it to 10% from the previous election.
Okay, thank you. So any discussion to the amendment? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Let me just see here. So Representative Frederick, please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House File 2802 seeks to address what I'll call shenanigans or potential shenanigans in our current system. To give some background, 19 states make some sort of designation between major and minor political parties. In Minnesota, a major political party then also has access to money from the state of Minnesota. And Minnesota, out of the states, Minnesota is only one of six where there is a 5% threshold. No state has a lower threshold that has money tied to it. Other states have up to a 20% threshold. And so this just seeks to, as one of the letters submitted by the chair of the Republican Party said, improve stewardship of taxpayer dollars. And so that is the goal of this legislation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we have a testifier for the bill, Oliver Steinberg. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name's Oliver Steinberg. I'm founder of the Grassroots Party. House File 2802 addresses two of the ways a minor party can be elevated to major party status. I support the 10% threshold for Section 200.02, Subdivision 7A, Clause 2. I had opposed that change in Subdivision 7C, but it's just been amended out. Our third-party heritage is echoed in the name of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and we have a strong tradition in our state of third parties. Our ballot access laws are already tough, but they're not insurmountable. Between 1986 and 2018, the Grassroots Party and its spinoff, the Legal Marijuana Now Party, successfully filed 52 nominating petitions, placing 64 candidates onto 13 general election ballots and one special election. In 1998, the Reform Party's winning governor candidate, Jesse Ventura, would still have had major party status even if the requirement had been 10% instead of 5%, because Ross Perot had received over 11% of the vote in 1996. Grassroots and Legal Marijuana Now parties both clinched major party status in 2018, but neither group was ready for prime time. I was glad to hear that the Republican Party has taken a stand on this bill, because that allows me to talk about their double standard, the rule or ruin Republican Party approach, as expressed by their last presidential candidate, who two elections in a row said that he would not accept the results of the election if he didn't like them. And it's worth pointing out that in seven out of the last eight elections, the Republican candidate for president has not been the choice of the people. It's also worth pointing out the Republican Party is supporting the attempt to install the legislative option to deny the popular vote entirely in states for selecting electors to the Electoral College. Well, when the two marijuana parties got their major party status, they were quickly targeted for interference by Republican Party supporters, whom I can name, and who had two objectives: to try to pull votes away from DFL candidates, and in the process, to discredit these two newly minted major parties. Some of these candidates had associations with the Republican State Senate caucus. Patrick Coolican and the Minnesota Reformer, broke that story, and they deserve credit for exposing Republican election fraud. And I must say that for Republicans to be talking about election integrity with what they're up to and have been up to is like the arsonist joining the fire department. Republicans repeated their dirty tricks in 2022, running again wino or weed in name only candidates in the Maryland party.
Yeah, let's
Well, I am speaking what appears to me to be the truth.
Yeah, I guess I would say try to avoid name calling. I mean, I'm allowing a little leeway because I know one of the purposes of this bill is to avoid the possibility of electoral mischief and people filing as candidates under parties that credible news stories have demonstrated that they don't believe to, so I do think it's relevant.
Mr. Chairman, I will sum it up. Thank you. I appreciate the advice there. I'll skip over some of this then.
And we do have your written testimony.
Raising automatic ballot status from 5% to 10% of the vote would protect and shield unprepared minor parties from fraud, treachery, and sabotage. Unfortunately, 2802 doesn't fix the basic problem. Namely, there's no recourse when a spoiler candidate files a dishonest affidavit of candidacy. And the solution to that is to require all candidates in the major parties and the minor parties as well to circulate nominating petitions. It would keep nuisance candidates out of every party's primaries. It would help deter cranks from running in districts where a party's presence is minimal. It would give you personal visits with your constituents. And since this solution would apply equally to all, it's probably the wisest way to make major party status more restrictive without its being seen as a DFL maneuver for self-aggrandizing political purposes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I did let Oliver Steinberg go a little bit longer. He is the only one testifying in mostly support of the bill. There are several people signed up in opposition. So I will ask the people, just since they're out of respect for members' time and the number of people who've signed up to testify in opposition, to limit their remarks to 2 minutes, and you should still outnumber the supporters of the bill by about a 4-to-1 ratio, I suspect. So the first testifier on the list is Chris Holbrook, and after Chris Holbrook will be Sean Holster. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Chris Holbrook. I'm an independent. I'm an entrepreneur. The fact that you have a 4-to-1 ratio of people opposed to this versus in support of it should tell you something right there. I hope you guys are all proud of yourselves for putting this forth. I'm assuming that's why you all ran for office, to use the power of law to ban your opponents from running for office. This is something you see in Russia when the president jails his opponents, or in China when President Xi got elected and he had his opponent escorted out of the chambers. That's what this bill does. You escort your opponents, the marijuana parties, out of the chambers. It's pretty simple to get rid of the marijuana parties, just legalize marijuana. I don't know what the problem is you're really trying to solve here. The Democrats didn't win enough offices. You didn't win enough votes. You've won every statewide election for 20 years. You have all the power in the state for governor, both chambers. You have the courts. This does nothing to expand rights of voters or access to voters. It limits choices of voters. And it's already limiting. I was with the Libertarian Party until this time last year, basically leaving over a feud on wasting resources trying to get ballot access, which we can't do already. We tried to get 5 people on the ballot in the statewide election, 10,000 signatures. We couldn't do that. Now you're going to double that requirement. The LPMN had 0 candidates run for state office last year because of the already restrictive ballot access laws. There was an article by Professor David Schultz from Hamline University basically laying out his opposition to this. 1/3 of people are independent. This bill does nothing more than serve to entrench the current monopoly of the 2 parties by making it difficult for third parties to form and get on the ballot. Lastly, on this notion of spoilers, I mean, this whole thing is rotten. It's hard to spoil something that's already rotten. There's a quote inscribed in the Capitol across the street by George Washington, which says, "If we mean to support liberty and independence, which have cost us so much blood and treasure to establish, we must drive away the demon party spirit." So I urge you to do what's right for the people of Minnesota and the individuals and independents like me, and not just vote in lockstep with your party power. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Sean Holster, and after Sean Holster will be Chip Tangen. Is Sean Holster here? Okay, I don't see Sean Holster, so Chip Tangen, and after Chip Tangen will be Kara Schultz. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Chip Tangen, and last year I attempted a run for Secretary of State as a Libertarian, so I can provide some perspectives on petitioning. This bill passes, that's going to be the only way that voters will see third-party candidates on their ballots. The chairman of the DFL says we routinely gain access to the ballot through petitioning. He goes on, quote, by requiring candidates to first gather a nominal number of signatures from registered voters in their district, we better serve the interests of Minnesota voters by ensuring that ballots are not cluttered with candidates in name only. Routine access, nominal signatures, cluttered ballots, no. Routine access. It's not routine for us to get on the ballot. There are 201 seats in the Minnesota State Legislature. Since the year 2000, a total of 12 Libertarians have managed to claw their way onto the ballot through petitioning. That nominal signature requirement, here's the rub with that. We have a mere 2 weeks to collect the signatures. It's just not enough time. The clock runs out. It's especially difficult in rural communities. Cluttered ballots. This may be the most offensive justification, not to the candidates, but to the voters. They deserve more choices. This bill removes choices. Now, last year, Democrats and Republicans failed to run a candidate in 24 legislative races. Mr. Chairman, would we have cluttered up those ballots? This is a ballot access petition. The forms are antiquated. My friends and family who helped me petition couldn't find legal-sized paper. They couldn't fit it in the printer. Some assumed that 8.5 by 11 was legal-sized when they handed me all their signed petitions. My wife and I personally met with people who had difficulty or couldn't fill out this paper form.
If you could people please wrap up your testimony in a few sentences. Thank you.
People who would tell me through the glass door, I have COVID, can you come back in a week? We didn't have time to come back in a week later. I ask you to reject this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Kara Schultz, and after Kara Schultz will be Samantha Pree Stinson. Welcome to the committee. Once you've arrived at the table, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Hello, I'm Kara Schultz, and I'm a sitting city council member for Burnsville. I had submitted a proposal for you to look at yesterday. I did not make the deadline, but we do have copies of that. And what it would do is actually fix the problem you're seeking to fix instead of what you're currently doing. Because the authors of HF 2802 have two problems they allege they're trying to fix: guarding taxpayer money from being spent by candidates deemed not worthy, protecting defenseless, poor little defenseless emerging parties from insincere candidates taking over their ballot line. This bill does not fix either of those, but what it does do is eliminate the threat of emerging parties that they pose to both legacy parties, and it also suppresses voter choice. I have a photo. This is Paula Overby, and I want you to know her as a human being. She tragically died a few months ago. And she's being used as an example of an insincere candidate. Here she is campaigning with her party members and the chair of her party. Paula was an amazing woman. She was an incredible candidate, and she was a great friend. She was also the first openly transgender woman to run for U.S. Congress. So to use her in an attempt to immediately strip her party of the major status that they deserved is vile. Now, for the public subsidy, if you don't want to give emergent party candidates campaign subsidies, then don't, because we don't care about that. We care about being on the ballot, so that takes care of your issue number one. When DFL Chair Ken Martin wrote that many states have two tiers of qualified parties, what he's not telling you is the minor parties in those states are on the ballot without petitioning, but they nominate their candidates at convention. And that's what would protect emerging parties from insincere candidates. So amend the bill so all minor party candidates are listed on the ballot without petitioning, but they must be nominated at convention. See, legacy parties do primaries. Us emerging parties can do conventions.
If you could please wrap up your testimony in a few sentences. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So if you want to kill off the competition and suppress voter choice, if you want to abuse your power to keep your power, just push this bill forward. However, if you would like to guard taxpayer funds and protect emerging parties from having their ballot lines stolen, please consider tabling this so that it can be brought back later to be amended. I do thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Council Member. The next testifier is Samantha Priest-Stinson, and after Samantha Priest-Stinson will be Rebecca Whiting. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Samantha Priest-Stinson, and I am the elected president of the Board of Estimate and Taxation in Minneapolis. I'm serving in my second term now, again, as president. I ran as a third-party candidate, and I won with 29,495 votes that I earned. I have higher political aspirations, and I should be allowed to have those and align with the values that I have with the party that I am attached to. My ancestors couldn't vote. And then there was poll taxes, and then there was intelligence tests. And then 5 years after my mother was born, legislation changed, and my people could fully vote. I served my country as a United States Army vet. I served 4 years. I spent 14 months in Afghanistan during Operation Enduring Freedom. My best friend was killed by an IED while she was decapitated during that attack. And one of the things that she also believed was in the right to choice. And she also wanted to run for office. And so I'm speaking with her spirit with me today. I fought for democracy then, and I'm fighting for it now. I would also ask that you table this. I'm opposed to the 10%, but I do support the amendment and allow us to choose our candidates at convention. I'm disappointed to say the least. We do have a right to a choice. It's interesting that today what we heard before this was ranked choice voting, where we heard that it eliminates the spoiler argument, and it gives people more reflective and representative representation. It gives a choice, and it encourages more candidates. Republicans aren't bringing this forward. Democrats are bringing this forward. And this is the exact opposite of what we just heard everybody clamoring about just before this started. So what's really the message here? I see this as oppressive, suppressive. It isolates and it polarizes folks. It's tone deaf, it's undemocratic, and it gives a strong optic of an abuse of power that you want to move the goalpost just because you can. And as a woman who stands on multiple intersections, as a vet, as a black woman, as a Chicana, as someone who's bilingual, as someone who is the granddaughter of an immigrant, I just find it interesting. In standing on those intersections, I'm constantly having to jump over hoops and hoops and hoops. And when I make it, more hoops are presented. And I pick myself up by the bootstraps that everybody talks about, and I make it happen. I am viable, I am qualified, I have multiple degrees, certifications, I've worked for a Fortune 500 company, I've served as a senior policy aide to an elected official. We aren't just crackpot candidates that are here to cause trouble and get in the way. We deserve to have a right to earn our choice, to earn our right to be on that ballot and stop being excluded. And so I'm asking you today to please pause on this and think very thoughtfully about what you're doing. I would also add as I wrap up that neighboring red states are actually at 1.5% to 3%, and the 20% that was referenced is one state, which is Alabama, and they do not have a two-week limit to signatures. They have as much time as they would like to get the signatures. So please today consider pausing so that you can have an amendment that makes more sense and actually gives voters a choice. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony, President Priest-Stinson, and thank you for your service. The next testifier is Rebecca Whiting, and after Rebecca Whiting will be Steve Patterson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Whiting. I drove down here from Bemidji, Minnesota this morning. I am also a U.S. Army combat veteran with 2 deployments to Iraq, where I served as a medic and a non-commissioned officer. I also identify as a libertarian. I am here today to oppose the discriminatory and tyrannical bill, HF 2808. I took an oath when I joined the Army that says I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And this bill goes against the very oath I swore, who my friends died for while serving at the orders of this country, and is in direct conflict with American ideals and principles the Constitution was founded on. If this bill passes, it will actually disenfranchise a substantial portion of the state who struggle with picking between 2 political parties, earning the authors of this bill the reputation for being antithetical to the very things they claim to champion, diversity, inclusion, and democracy. I have earned the right to pick which political party I want to vote for. This bill will blue wash the state and keep minority voices from overcoming the oppressive tyranny of this bill. In rural Minnesota, where I live, trying to get on the ballot as a third party is already a substantial hurdle because we do not have the population density to get the required signatures over just 2 weeks in the spring. This bill wants to double the requirements we need to earn major party status, to not have to petition at all. The state doesn't have a third party problem, as evident by the lack of third parties in elected positions. Third parties are taxed without representation. In the British Parliament, there are 10 parties in the House of the Lords and 12 parties in the House of Commons. The British monarchy is more represented than the American political system. How is it that the very empire that the Founding Fathers bled to break free of has more political options than the system we currently find ourselves? Tyranny in every form must be challenged, and everyone here to oppose this bill stands unified today to take the next step. We will not accept the passage of this bill, no matter what happens, until all Americans are free everywhere to vote their conscience, and not just a pre-approved political party who manipulates the laws to advance only their best interest. It's dishonest and it's unethical, and it's good to remember how Americans have always dealt with tyrants, because history has a funny way of repeating itself when there are no good choices left.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for coming all this way to testify. The next testifier is Steve Patterson, and after Steve Patterson will be Sean Sullivan.
Morning, everybody. I'd like to start by thanking you all for allowing me to speak today, and secondly, I'd like to wish you all a happy anniversary, as 3 years ago, Tim Walz shut down the state. I have always voted, but I've never considered myself a politician until my governor forced me to stay in my home. I ran for office last year because there was not a strong candidate that represented my needs as a voter. As a business owner whose business was closed due to COVID restrictions, I needed to be represented. I ran an honest, transparent campaign without any financial help from any voter or party and without party support. The result of my efforts was a fourth place finish in the gubernatorial election. If you do the math, I paid about 44 cents per vote out of my own checking account, and you can check that. Tim Walz spent about $6.56 per vote, so the notion that I'm wasting anyone's money just about frustrates me, to keep it kosher. The notion that I ran as an illegitimate candidate is an absolute facade. The idea that I affected someone's ability to be on the ballot is absolutely absurd. Every voter wants to be represented. The best question from the debates that I was not invited to, hosted by KTTC out of Rochester, was what do we need to do to get people of diversity into the debates? My answer is to allow everyone on the general election ballot into the debates. If you're familiar with the 6 candidates for governor, they were not all white old men. I do not represent the radical left or right, but instead the moderate majority that affects the outcome of elections. I cannot be bought and paid for, and that's what makes the one percenters nervous, because I would only represent typical Minnesotans rather than special interest groups that have smothered Minnesotans with unreasonable restrictions for decades. If I was allowed into the debates last year and we offered ranked choice voting, it would have been a much different result. And that's why you are trying to keep people like me off the ballot. Third-party voters are worth it just as much as left or right voters.
You could.
I urge you to pretend like they are not. And lastly, I'll go ahead and say that I don't plan on running again, so this isn't for my personal gain. But I'm trying to pass the baton on to other third-party voters that are willing to stand up for themselves when other representatives, simply put, will not. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Sean Sullivan, and after Sean Sullivan will be Trenton Hawthorne. Welcome to the committee. Once you've arrived at the table, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Morning. My name is Sean Sullivan. I'm a United States Marine Corps veteran, member of the Libertarian Party, and from Bloomington, Minnesota. We'll start off with a quote. Always vote for principle, though you may vote alone, and you may cherish the sweetest reflection that your vote is never lost. This quote is from John Quincy Adams and is extremely important to our constitutional republic. It means we vote for what we truly believe in, not for a lesser of two evils. The implementation of H.R. 2802 is, as it would be, restrict the choices available for voters, take away their choices for what they truly believe, and block people from knowing what is offered by individual candidates outside of the major parties. It defeats the entire purpose of ranked choice voting. Major party status is the topic of the day for this bill. Using the status way is restrictive. You're restricting and suppressing voters from voting for who they truly believe is best. As a Marine Corps veteran, this angers me. Even though I never saw combat, I was still taught that good, lawful choices were instead of what they were instead of what normal bad versus choices, which seems to permeate in politics. Even if what you are doing is lawful, that does not always mean it is good. What all independent and third-party candidates want is access to debates and the ballots. We don't care about robbing the taxpayers to fund our campaigns because the taxpayers voluntarily support us to begin with. The taxpayer is the voter, and the voter should not be coercively forced to fund political parties. We know the main reason to restrict us from ballot and debate access is because you are afraid that we, the people, want to do the DFL and the GOP the way we did the Whigs in the 1850s. You should be afraid, but you should not be changing the rules because we, the people, are starting to choose somebody else. We have proven time and time again, as JFK stated, one person can make a difference, and everyone should try, just as Governor Ventura did when he shocked the world. As the great Ludwig von Mises once said, the essence of democracy is not that everyone makes and administers laws, but that lawgivers and rulers should be dependent on the people's and will in such a way that they may be peaceably changed if conflict occurs. Democracy is under threat. It is your job to protect it, not to destroy it with restriction.
If you could wrap up in a few sentences, I'd appreciate it.
Stand up for what is right, do not do what you know is wrong. Please vote no for this restrictive bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service. The next testifier is Trenton Hawthorne, and after Trenton Hawthorne will be Thomas Wright.
You come back.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is T.J. Hawthorne, and I thank you, members of the committee, Chair. I'm a United States Navy veteran, and I also ran for House District 44B this last year. Thankful for all the rest of the shenanigans that showed up today. I actually take offense to that word, shenanigans, that kind of hit home. So I'd like to tell you a story about my experience this last year running for Minnesota House District 44B. This is quite exceptional, considering all the exceptions I had to face being a minor party candidate. First, all you have to do is get 500 signatures on these petitions. Well, the signatures must be taken within this very specific window at the end of spring, with 2 weeks to do it, with Memorial Weekend in that window. Then the signatures have to be on legal paper, 8.5 by 14. Don't go print out your own 100 pages because they're all going to be discounted. Each individual must fill out the whole line. Nothing can be auto-filled. Like, we're walking up to a house and just say, hey, can you sign this? And they all have to be residents of the district, which I can somewhat understand that, but then the creepy oath that is printed on that petition makes a lot of folks reluctant because they don't really understand this political process. Ultimately, we were able to gather almost 700 signatures with some help of friends and that are also in this room. And I won't talk about the experience that I had here at the Secretary of State's office while turning those petitions in. But I will tell you that the changes that are reflected here in House File 2802 won't actually affect my goals to win this election of House District 44B, because gathering those 500 signatures was actually fairly easy when I walk up to someone and tell them, hey, I'm running for state representative, but I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. They're reaching for that petition. They didn't really even care that I'm a Libertarian. And so that is one thing that I am excited about, and that I don't really care about this file, other than the fact that I have other party members that I do care about. I'm definitely not interested in the public money that this is also talking about as a major party. That is something that we definitely need to get out of politics. So in closing, knowing that this is a bipartisan effort, reading the letters from the DFL chair and the Republican chair, it's evidence that it's clear that the major parties are worried about the competition that they're facing. If they can keep our ideas out, then they can keep the policies that keep them in office, and this is an office that should be a duty and not a career. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service. The next testifier is Thomas Wright, and after Thomas Wright will be Dennis Schuler. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
I do go by Chris Wright.
Excuse me. My apologies.
You might know, I ran for governor four times where I was on the ballot. Anyway, Mr. Chair and committee members, I urge you to vote no on this bill. When it comes to defending our fragile democracy, restoring citizen control of government, and reigning in corporate power, we are in the fight of our lives. Redefining the major party status threshold to 10% is an attempt to end our multi-party democracy in favor of a money-controlled uniparty with two wings. Democrats who pretend to prefer human rights over property rights, and Republicans who would rather die than be hypocritical. Sadly, the tradition of multi-party democracy that spawned farmer labor Governor Floyd B. Olson and gave us reform Governor Jesse Ventura will end. Since the Independence Party, the Green Party received major party status, the major party success of the Grassroots Party and Legal Marijuana Now Party has forced the legislature to pass the legalization of marijuana, which will probably pass this year. Obviously, marginalized parties have become too successful to allow a multi-party democracy to exist. A duopoly to end competition may seem like a good idea. Dictator Napoleon Bonaparte noted, "I've come to realize that men are not born to be free. Liberty is a need felt by a class of people whom nature has endowed with nobler minds than the mass of men. Consequently, they can be repressed with impunity. Equality, on the other hand, pleases the masses. A two-party tyranny is the antithesis of liberty and equality. Cannabis makes you cough. Politics makes you gag. Thank you."
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier is Dennis Schuler, and after Dennis Schuler, our final testifier will be Philip Fuhrer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning still. My name is Dennis Schuler. I'm a member of the head council and current running up for U.S. president with the Legal Marijuana Now Party. This HF 2802 directly affects me because I petitioned to get here. We attained major party status lawfully, which you are trying to take away retroactively. No. I am, in addition, all smaller parties are being penalized over our success. False allegations created by Oliver Steinberg that have us like some sort of characters in a wild tale about a nefarious plot, secret figures working behind the scenes, trying to be anything more than well-intentioned citizens, is just a tale not based in reality. I personally work with the candidates, many of whom are running for their first times with us. Never once has anyone introduced themselves as infiltrators, nor have I felt threatened in any way by any extreme points of view. To the contrary, I'm proud of the candidates that have run with us. I have met caring, independent people that are genuinely trying to make a positive difference and have their voice heard. Also, if you leave the Democrat or Republican Party and join us, I welcome that, because people are. They're getting fed up with getting the same old line about freedom and having their rights curtailed. Smaller parties and independent individuals should have equal ballot access. How many of you spent 2 weeks petitioning? I doubt you could. It's a lot of work. However, great leadership may be what you're afraid of, and that's why people are drawn to us and our message, and will continue to fight regardless. I urge you to vote against HF 2802.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier is Philip Fuhrer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Phil Fuhrer, State Chair, Independence Party, Independence Alliance, the old Reform Party, since we're talking veteran status, U.S. Army 86 to 90. There is demonstrably no problem with the 5% threshold that has been in place for 110 years in Minnesota, other than the national median being 2%. Since 2002, how many candidates have run statewide with the possibility of getting major party status? How many parties have run? How many parties can you name? How many were successful? If you don't know, then you don't know how high the 5% hurdle really is. Arguments in support of this bill are a variety of selective definitional bait and switch, show a lack of understanding, and are hypocritical at best, and we've heard them today. The use of major minor party status is not standardized in the U.S. To infer such or incorrectly cite statistics, as we've heard today, and as did DFL Chair Martin, as if comparing apples to apples, is disingenuous. In Minnesota, the benefit of major party status is ballot access and potential access to the general fund portion of the campaign public subsidy. So how much money are we talking about? How much is being thrown around and wasted? What about being good stewards of that public treasury? We already are. A candidate must earn access to those funds. It is clear that those funds are not being used with no accountability. No, zero alternative candidates qualified for subsidies in 2020. One candidate in 2022 qualified for just under $29,000. Argumentation on curbing misuse of subsidies shows a clear lack of understanding of how the rules in place already provide effective protections. Finally, citing fraud or disingenuous candidates is pure hypocrisy. No measures are being put forth to stop it within your parties. Apparently, it's not a problem to have a self-described Trumpocrat running repeatedly as a statewide candidate as a DFLer. They don't win. Well, perhaps you should take a look at the 1994 Republican results. To my earlier questions, 101 candidates have run from 20 parties since 2002.
If you could wrap up your testimony in a few sentences, I'd appreciate it.
A few more sentences.
Thank you.
So, 101 candidates have run from 20 parties since 02. Three have had major party status, three parties. Take out the IP, and three of 77 candidates, 3.9% of the time, a candidate has broken 5%. This bill uses a meat cleaver to conduct brain surgery, and I'm left with two conclusions. You either do not grasp the implications of this and the hurdles currently in place, which is a travesty of representative democracy, should it advance, or you are all too familiar with its implications to destroy sustained competition to the duopoly, an even greater travesty. If you truly believe there is an issue to be addressed, then table this and meet for real solutions with myself and other real subject matter experts on this. The other alternative voices that you heard who have specifically been working on this for decades. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes people who have signed up to testify. There is an amendment still on the table. Representative Bliss, I see you nodding. Would you like to move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that amendment. I believe it's A2.
I think it's A1, actually.
A1, okay. I don't know.
So many papers today, I've lost where I am.
Representative Bliss has moved the A1 amendment for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment removes the 10% and 10% and brings it down to 1% and 1%. You know, I've got a chart here of where all the rest of the 50 states are. And right now we're about in the middle of the pack, maybe a little bit higher for major party status. This will move us up equivalent to 4 states. That's 46 people, 46 states less than us, unless we're doing, no, never mind, I'm not going to make that joke. That's my amendment, and Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this amendment. Okay.
A roll call has been requested on the amendment.
Thank you. I want to make it clear that because there's a letter here from somebody within the party, even though they hold a position of leadership within that party, they do not speak for the majority, I don't believe. I am not afraid of smaller parties. They enrich us. I do not agree with the Green Party. I do not agree with the Legalized Marijuana Now Party. I find it interesting that I'm agreeing with our former governor, and I never thought I would be in that situation either. I'm proud conservative Republican, but I do welcome our friends in the minor parties into the mix. And this amendment will allow more people into the discussions in the elections and not less. Again, just earlier today we had stating that the bill that was in front of us was going to increase participation in the ballot, and right now we're doubling what it takes to get on the ballot. And I just really, something stinks in Denmark, and I hope that you accept this amendment and resolve that. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for the record, since I don't see you with a laptop or anything up there, I am looking at a document from the National Association of Secretaries of State. There's been a couple conflicting things mentioned, but as I understand it, there are several states that use the 10% threshold for major party status, including Colorado, Nevada, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Wyoming. Pennsylvania actually goes up to 15%, and then Alabama, Connecticut, Georgia, and Kentucky go up to 20%. So this would be a pretty dramatic reduction. Do you have any comments on it, Representative Frederick?
I would say that the amendment is going the opposite direction of what the bill does, but we already did accept the A2 amendment, which eliminated the changes that we were doing to the petition process. So we're actually not in this bill having any change. So there's a lot of testimony regarding to the petitioning process to become a major party, and this bill no longer even impacts that. And so I would just request a no vote to this amendment.
Yeah. Thank you. Any additional discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, a roll call has been requested. What? Okay, clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
No.
Vice Chair Greenman.
No.
Minority Leader Torkelson. Representative Agbaje. Representative Altendorf.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bliss.
Yes.
Representative Coulter.
No.
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Frederick?
No.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Quam is excused. Representative Stevenson?
Okay. There being six nays and three ayes, the amendment does not prevail. We'll go to member discussion. Representative Altendorf?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick, for bringing this. And my question, thank you to all the testifiers today. Thank you very much for testifying. We had so many testifiers that testified against this bill, so I do want to thank each and every one of you for showing up today on a Friday and testifying, and it's important to hear your voices. I am against this very, very much so, and I just want to ask Representative Frederick, you know, because there was so much testimony, could you just bring it back in and give me your one or two best reasons why a person should support this bill, because I just want to rewrap my brain around that. What is the number one and number two reason why the Democrat Party is supporting this bill right now?
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate everyone that came and shared their stories, especially those that have run for office. I even appreciated a couple of the commentator or a couple of the testifiers who even brought up ranked choice voting as something that would be beneficial to third parties. I think that that's a good argument that hopefully everyone can then take home and you know, be an advocate and support of this. So if we are supporting third parties and want to show that through our votes, I think supporting ranked choice voting would be an excellent way to do that. But regarding this bill itself, I would say that that as many voices that as we can have in our political discourse is a good thing. However, as has been stated, that the parties don't have a lot of control necessarily about who runs under their banner. And there have been admissions by people who have run that they don't actually subscribe to the banner that they're running under, that their intention was to be a spoiler candidate. And so if that is their intention, that then also gives them access to public subsidy dollars. So it's an intentional disinformation, I guess, that then gives them access to public dollars. And this is an attempt to say that we want to make sure that those that are running under the banner that they're claiming actually subscribe to the values, to those values of whatever they happen to be.
Yeah, thank you. Follow-up, Representative Waldendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick. And I don't know that I'm new. I was just elected. So I don't know the history of this, I guess. I don't know if this was brought through the House before. And Representative Frederick, I am sorry that someone handed this bill to you. The Democrats have been in control of Minnesota here for over 20 years. And this is very, very confusing to an average Minnesota voter as we watch the Democrats, that they're for minorities until they're against them. They're for the little guy until they're against them. They're for marijuana until they're against them. It's very confusing. Right now, we have a two-party system that controls, and in other countries where we see multiple, more political involvement, more parties, we don't have this huge divide that we have in Minnesota and that we have in our country. We don't have this huge divide. And so it's almost like the system is built up to divide us, to put us on sides, because we're always at odds at each other. We're always fighting each other. This is very unfortunate. Right now in Minnesota, we saw the Democrat Party that they are voting lockstep on everything. No one will move that. So if someone thought they voted for a candidate this year, no, you voted for a party stance. And if you voted for a Republican, this is what I think of that. And so I would vote against it. And just for once, again, it's St. Patrick's Day. We're wearing green. Could you please vote with Minnesota and not with your party?
Yeah, just a couple comments. First of all, we should not impugn anybody's motives or suggest that they're voting a certain way for any, you know, for any particular reason. So I'll just call on the next member, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to use a dangerous phrase here and say I wasn't planning to speak to this. Just to address some of the issues that have been raised here. In particular, we've had a few testifiers raise the 2-week petition period. And I will go ahead and say that I think that probably is not enough time for folks who want to petition their way on the ballot. I am certainly willing to look at that and see where that leads us. But I also want to be clear about what this bill does do and does not do. This bill does not change anything with regards to minor party status. And Minnesota, for a variety of reasons, has chosen to make a delineation between major and minor parties. And we can have the discussion about whether or not that is the wise choice, but that is the choice that we have made. And this does not change that. The ability for emerging parties to become minor parties still exists as it does now. I would think an emerging party may want to grow into a minor party and then grow into a major party. That's not what we've seen recently. And I think that is, to me, the real wisdom in this bill. And I want to be clear as well that this bill changes one number. The amendment, it used to change two numbers until the amendment changed one back. This bill changes one number. It does not change any other path that emerging parties have to become major parties. And I think we just need to be really, really clear about that. And again, to this point, we delineate major and minor parties. And to me, major political party should mean something. It should mean that there's an active organization out there working to build support, to recruit candidates, to do the things that it takes to win elections. And that's, I think, what this bill gets at, and that's why I support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. And just for the gallery, please try to be quiet during these hearings. We do have rules of decorum that we follow. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just amazed that we actually have something before us where Democrats want to save the taxpayer money. First time I've
seen that. Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, we have been very liberal in this hearing. And I appreciate your willingness to be very liberal. But can we please remind members to not impugn motives?
I have reminded them several times, Representative Bonner. Representative Davis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Frederick, you had said something about, in your testimony, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but something about people running under guise or deceiving the party they're running with or not being completely honest. They run with the party and then that's not really what they're about. Do you remember what your comment was there? I'm having a hard time remembering it.
Representative Davis, please go through the chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you. I do want to mention, when one of the testifiers was talking, there are documented examples of candidates who filing under parties that evidence suggests they don't belong to. I don't think that applies to the people who testified today, and I don't think it applies to Paula Overby, who was brought up. I didn't hear anybody mention her name as an example. So I did want to correct the record on that, just on that one issue. Representative Frederick, I don't know if you had any additional comments.
I would argue that probably happens today in the major parties. It probably happens on the Democrat side and the Republican side. So, I guess I'll just end with this. There's started to hear there's a little debate between minority party and major party, minor party and major party, political party, and it's. To me, the blood of patriots wasn't shed so that we could have that argument or debate. I'm a hard no on this. We are a constitutional republic. We have democratic elections, and that's another thing. I'm sick of hearing how this nation is a democracy. It is not a democracy. We have to stick with the facts. The fact is, we are a constitutional republic. We have democratic elections, and. I think that hurts this process, so I'll end with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I don't have any additional members on the list to testify or to speak or ask questions, so I'll just mention a couple comments. So ranked choice voting was brought up here, as a better solution to addressing this issue of spoiler candidates, and I agree with that to an extent, but I do think it's worth mentioning that the ranked choice bill we advanced today would not apply in any statewide elections where this is the issue, frankly. There are documented examples of candidates filing, particularly under the marijuana party candidates, but it could potentially happen to the Republican Party as well, where, if a party with a MAGA party or something like that were to get major party status, it could, Democrats could file under that party's name in an attempt to siphon votes away from the Republican Party. And I think that sort of behavior is, when it does occur, and again, just to reiterate, I don't believe anyone who's testified today falls under this category, but I do think that type of behavior is dishonest and undermines elections. Other state party thresholds, as mentioned, are higher than we are proposing to go today. This is a pretty normal provision. And I think, it's strange to me that we have, this is one bill where we have actually letters in support from both the chairs of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I know the minority parties talked about the importance of election bills being bipartisan. It seems like when the actual heads of the parties write in support of it, this is a bipartisan election bill. That being said, we are not voting on this bill today. The motion before us is to lay the bill over. So I do appreciate that everyone came and testified. I appreciate the passion everyone brings to this issue. Representative Frederick, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. I think that you just hit on the majority of what I would say. But to that, I would also add, in response to some of the testimony of what we heard today, specifically around the timeline for the petitions, I think that that is worthy of further discussion, that if we need to expand it, I'm open to that discussion as well. And even the testifier that brought up the form size of things that we can make that easier as well, I think that that's also a very valid point, and would happy to try to see how we can improve the bill even on just something like that as well. And with that, I would appreciate the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Frederick renews the motion that House File 2802 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. That concludes our agenda for today. Because we had this hearing today, we have not yet. Normally, we would post the agenda for Wednesday by today, but hopefully by the end of today, we can do that. Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, you know, we have a tradition in the Minnesota House that freshmen bring treats. And some people have gone above and beyond. A non-freshman brought us donuts today. I want to recognize Representative Greenman and thank her.
Thank you, Lead Torkelson, for that bipartisan acknowledgement. I think we all are extremely grateful to Vice Chair Greenman for bringing treats. And if you hadn't gotten one yet, please head over. Looks like there's plenty left.
From District 63B.
They are from District 63B. With that, this committee is adjourned.